High Desert and the Great American Southwest. Good evening. It's a Friday night, Saturday morning. The moon out there is full. The night's still and cold. And it's going to be a very interesting program. And so I suggest you strap in, turn up the radio, and get ready. In the next hour comes Major Ed Daines, affectionately known as Dr. Doom. Not so affectionately by others. In the first hour, coming up in a moment, a surprise visit from Mel Waters. That would be Mel of Mel's Hole fame. A lot of people said he was dead. Recently I've had some communication from people who thought he was dead. Well, he's not dead. He's here tonight, and he's going to fill you in on, you know, kind of what's happened since. Coming right up. Here from an undisclosed location, unless he wishes to disclose it, is Mel Waters. Mel, welcome to the program.
Well, hello there, Art Bell.
Welcome back to the program is more like it.
Well, thank you. All I'll say is I'm in my nephew's apartment.
Okay, that'll do.
Okay.
All right, Mel, what we need is an update, if you have one, to Washington, an update, of course, on the whole here in my state, Nevada.
Right. Okay. First of all, I'm not dead.
That's a good thing, Mel.
And I did have a very, very, very close brush with death back around Memorial Day.
Maybe that's where people got it.
But I am doing well, and I am not yet ready to eat the big green wiener yet. Anyway, yes, I do want to bring people up to date and let them know how things are going.
All right, good. Where to begin?
Well, I'm going to talk to you about kind of where we left off in Nevada.
All right.
I think that would be, is it Nevada or Nevada?
I say Nevada. I
wonder about that sometimes.
Just try either one. We'll answer to it. Whatever.
Anyway, the one in your state here,
yes.
I told you that we had lowered a bucket of ice into the hole there in your state. And that
you don't want to tell us any more about where the hole is.
I think that might end up coming out here, or I think people will be able to discern where it is in your state.
All right.
I think a lot of people have got a very good idea, and I'm going to tell you that the location where the hole is at has been under helicopter surveillance almost I don't mean constantly, like 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
But there have been flyovers of that area
frequently,
like frequently.
Yeah.
But there's been no contact with the Basque that are there, that are encamped around there.
That's pretty odd, considering the military cordon that was thrown around the hole in Washington.
Well, yeah, that is, and I've yet to discern how they were able to mobilize so quickly on that. That's still a great mystery for me.
Nevertheless, you said you were reminding us a bucket of ice.
Yeah, one thing, I said they have had flyovers of the hole there in your state. I was told something very interesting, and that is that from certain approaches to where the area that they're in,
Yeah. You
can see the encampment of people. You could see the Basque if you're standing there, say, on the hillside, but you cannot see the flange around the hole. I told you that with this hole, there was like a metal collar,
that's right,
a flange around. You cannot see that from a certain distance. You can see everything else, and the flange is huge. It's a very large metallic structure, you know, that provides like a collar for this thing.
Mel, your opinion.
Yeah.
Does this hole go down somewhere near the center of the Earth? I mean, how far?
Well, of course, you know, people know what my experience with it was, lowering all that fishing line into it, and I'm absolutely certain that I got 80,000 feet of line into it, which is, I don't know, 15 miles or so of line. That's a crazy thing to do, but I did it. I'm just one of those people that are determined to get to the bottom of things.
Only you never did get to the bottom of the hole.
That's when I was at that level, that was my first contact with you. That, you know, when I reached that point there, that's when I said, I better reveal what I'm doing to the audience to find out what am I dealing with.
Yeah.
You know, and so this whole thing started. Well, let me tell you about what had occurred. You know, we lowered that bucket of ice. We pulled it up there. We had a bucket of ice up there at the surface. That bucket of ice at the surface had melted completely. We brought up the bucket of ice from a depth of, I believe it was 1,000 feet.
Uh-huh.
We lowered it down 1,000 feet. We brought it up. The ice was unmelted. So we stuck it on the campfire there to in the metal bucket to see if we could melt it. Well, the thing caught fire, as I said.
The ice caught fire.
Ice caught fire, was burning. And it was a kind of a strange fire, but it generated heat. I don't know. I still to this, well, I might be getting ahead of myself, but it must have been some sort of chemical reaction. Somehow the water was changed.
Yeah.
We actually touched the ice, you know, and it felt like ice, but not cold. And when we came, that's when we took it, you know, before we set it on fire.
Like ice, but not cold.
Right. I mean, it wasn't cold, and so was what was going on here. So we, you know, we lowered it, we put it in the bucket. Well, I told you that it caught fire, and eventually one of these Bass fellows took the bucket of ice, set it in the back of his pickup truck, drove off, and took it home, and stuck it inside of his wood stove.
Had the ice been put out?
No, it was just kind of, you know.
Well, I mean, he had it in his vehicle.
He had it in the back of his pickup truck.
Trying to tell me it was burning while it was in there?
Yeah. Well, he wanted to take it home and put it in his wood stove to see if it would keep him warm.
Well, so he did that.
Yeah, well, the Basque are kind of crazy people. Are you in any way familiar with the Basque in general or specific or just kind of heard of them?
No, of course I've heard of them, but I mean, no.
The Basque are very well known in your state. In fact, the University up there of Nevada at Reno has a huge section on the Basque.
So he took it home. It's not that weird. I mean, it was burning.
Yeah.
Ice burning is weird.
Yes, and he took this home and set it in his wood stove, and it kept him toasty warm throughout the winter.
Throughout the winter?
Throughout the winter. And for
you're telling me this one piece of ice burned.
Well, what we did is in this bucket, metal bucket, we stuck in a bag of like 7-Eleven ice, you know, the kind that you buy at the
convenience
store, you know,
sure.
Ice cubes.
Yes.
That's what it was. That's what we put in there. Nothing else. Just the metal bucket lowered down into this hole. We get it, and we stick it on the fire, and it's burning. Okay, so anyway, this goes on for quite some time, and he sets it in his wood stove, keeps them warm, and I imagine that today it'd still be burning or is burning. I have no.
You the last you heard, it was still going.
Well, you know, we're going to go to probably what Paul Harvey says the rest of the story here, because this is what I've been told.
All right,
he says, you know, when you have a wood stove. And you're burning wood, you generally will put a kettle on top of that wood stove.
Yeah.
And, you know, to have hot water for coffee and to humidify the air.
Sure, whatever.
You know, it dries out the air terribly. Well, this Basque fellow, he just did just that there, and he noticed there that the air was, like, really, really dry. He was always thirsty, and his skin was, like, flaking. I mean, this was like, I don't know, he must have been living in humidity lower than what you face out there in the desert, you know, and so you know, he's got this kettle up on top there, you know, trying to humidify the air. And one night he notices that, I don't know, it might have been the angle of the light or just whatever it was, but the steam from the kettle looked like it was being absorbed into the stove. And we're not saying, like, through the vents or, you know, through the door or whatever.
Wait a minute. The steam from the kettle, which would have been going up, would be...
Would be coming
back down and then absorbed by the stove.
Yeah, it was like dispersing and then coming around and just like I guess the word to describe is lingering around, but it looked like it was being absorbed by the stove. That's the I think that's the best picture I can.
That's weird.
That is strange.
Of course, this is already really weird. We've got ice that's burning eternally so far, and that's I can picture it.
Okay, so I mean, I want to be able to, because this is what I've been told, but I have absolute belief in, you know, the person that told me this, this goes on. Anyway, you know, the stove is out there, and it's producing heat, and this guy is real happy, and even though he's, like, real thirsty and really dry,
yeah.
You know, and then one day this guy comes home, you know, he goes out and does his thing and comes home and he notices that the stove had crashed through the hearth and through the floorboards of his cabin.
What?
It just like went right down. It just broke. I mean, you know, it was kind of a flimsy cabin, you know, but it was able to support the weight of his wood stove and his...
So now the stove with his eternally burning ice is now through the floor.
It's in the ground. It's actually in on like the dirt. Maybe it fell like about a foot into the ground at that point.
I wonder if this thing is going back from whence it came.
Well, that's what I want to know, and we're going to continue along with this here. But anyway, the stove is sitting down there. Now this guy, you know, sometimes I wonder about these guys, but you know, he's not too bright. So what he does is. He patches up the stove pipe.
Yeah.
And so it connects to the chimney with, you know, the flue, all that stuff there.
Yeah.
And you know, he's kind of living in this cabin with this, stove.
You mean he's still using the stove?
Yeah.
He just extended the pipe?
Yes, that's exactly what he did. You know, he just kind of lowered it down there. And as far as I could tell, though, it doesn't give off any gas or any... no smoke or anything.
He made no attempts to bring it back up to fix the floor and do it right, huh?
No, he didn't. You know, he continues to live with it, you know, and about, I don't know, a week, maybe 2 weeks later, he comes home, and the entire cabin has collapsed.
What?
Around us. The whole thing.
The whole thing.
Everything has collapsed around it. In fact, all there is around the side of the cabin is piles of wood dust. Wood dust.
So in other words, his cabin disintegrated.
It basically looked like all of the moisture that was in the wood had been sucked out of it completely to the point that it could no longer exist as wood.
Wow. Now, this is pretty interesting because so far it's pretty consistent, that's for sure. This thing reabsorbed its own moisture. It absorbed so much moisture this man had terrible skin trouble. Still, he kept it going. And now he absorbed all the moisture out of the wood.
He had wood furniture in there, you know, his bed and a chair or whatever.
Yep.
Wood dust. You know, you could see the different colors of wood dust. And at that point, he abandons the cabin, gets the heck out of there.
Understood.
He says, hey, enough is enough. So he moves in with one of his brothers.
Yes.
And they're over there, and about a month later, he goes back to the cabin to show it to his brothers, and they find that the stove had sunk to, like, 5 feet into the ground.
This thing's on its way.
It's 5 feet into the ground, and it is still generating heat.
And still going.
And, you know, at that point, all the dust had blown away, and, you know, you got a few nails around there. And what you have is a rectangular hole, just a little bit bigger than the stove. So can you imagine a rectangular wood stove sinking into the ground, leaving its imprint? And there's a little bit of room around it, but not a lot. And, he described that the hole that it made was also... like really, 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 really smooth all around it. You think of a hole in dirt.
Like it's burning its way through. Like it's
melted into some sort of glassy type.
Maybe it's doing the same thing, and it's taking away all the moisture in the soil below it as it goes.
This is the point where the Basque fellow contacts me.
Okay.
And they have a way of getting a hold of me. And... I say something that I probably shouldn't say on the air, but anyway, we
something
know.
Like holy smokes.
Well, yeah, that would be it.
Uh-huh.
Holy smokes. then I did something which I thought I would never do.
What?
And that is, I contacted one of the people that were my contacts when I was in Australia.
Okay.
Okay, I had a number, and I described the situation to this guy here. And he pretty much said the same thing that I said, holy smoke. And he tells me it's, like, really important that I tell him where the cabin was.
Of course.
And how to get to it.
Well, I mean, after all, Mel, this is, before it disappears from sight into a creation of a new hole, this is something that could be immediately researched.
Well, so I talked to the Basque, and all the land that I'm talking about is on public land. You know, so the cabin, you know, the guy's like a squatter out there, you know, out in the boondocks. He's got a shack that, you know, if it burned down, he wouldn't care about it. He'd just put up another one, you know, a couple of feet away.
Gotcha.
But he decides, okay, well, there's no way to really trace me, you know, to here, so I'm not going to get any trouble. So we say, okay, I get back with this guy here. This is exactly where to find it, you know, tell him how to get there. And so at that point, there's a team dispatched to the site of the former cabin.
A team
of people show up there.
Way to go.
And now this guy, this Basque fellow there, he's got a nice vantage point. He knows all the land around there. He knows where he can sit out there and squat and look around. So he's got a pretty good view of where his cabin used to be. So he's out there, you know, watching what's going on.
Yes.
Now, he said he wasn't sure if they were military guys or what kind of guys they were. I would imagine that some of them had to be scientists. Of some sort, and you know, they're out there for a while, and shortly after that, there's like a bunch of heavy duty construction equipment, cranes and things that are brought out there.
Here we go.
Yeah. And then this is like, you know, big stuff, you know, super big stuff. But, you know, he's up there and he's watching this, and the people down there at the cabin are really, like, struggling to get this stove out of the ground.
Yeah.
And at that point, I assumed that it sunk even deeper than it, than it was. And that last time he said it was about, like, 5 feet deep. So this thing was pretty deep out there. They keep on bringing it in heavier and heavier and heavier equipment, bigger cranes. They bring in multiple cranes. They're still, I guess, not able to get a purchase on this thing to lift it out.
Hey, Mel, I wonder if this is the way the holes got made in the first place.
I do not know what the mechanism here is.
Because so far, what you've described sounds like it's making a new hole.
From that standpoint, it sure as heck does. And, I mean, you know, obviously this thing is sinking deeper and deeper into the ground, and they are, you know, it's like a total, you know, they're totally baffled at how to get this thing out here. I assume that when they're trying to bring it up there, that they're breaking off pieces of the stove because, you know, it's made out of cast iron or whatever, and it must be busting up there, that the thing is really heavy. Well, eventually what they do is they drop some chains into to the ground, and then they pour some water in there. To the ground.
Yeah.
and I don't know if this is what happened, but this is what I assumed happened. Is somehow the water and the chains and the metal all congealed together, you know, kind of like held fast like glue to the structure and everything that was in the hole.
Yeah.
Well, eventually they were able to get this thing out of the ground and hoisted up, and they were using more than one crane at this point. Now, I don't know a lot about cranes, but usually they could pick up a lot of stuff. They had several cranes working on getting this thing out, so it must have weighed some huge amount.
God, talking like fascinating. What? So the weight alone would have broken it through the floor. The weight certainly would
initially, yeah.
Wouldn't have dug the hole, though. Oh, isn't that fascinating?
Yeah, and so they finally get this thing out of the ground using multiple cranes, the biggest ones they can get. This guy said these things were like monster cranes. They get it up, and they load it onto the biggest truck this guy had ever seen in his life.
I mean, yeah.
This was bigger than big, and they haul that thing away. It is like gone, you know, there it is over there. You know, and so they just took the stove away. I don't know if he got a good look to see what the stove looked like, but they loaded whatever was in there, detached the chains from the hooks and stuff, and trucked this thing off.
All of this, in essence, just to get this burning ice, really?
That's what they got. But this guy here, as soon as I talked to him, he knew something was going down, and something had gotten, well, my impression was it had gotten like out of control.
And all of this just from something you lowered into the hole here in Nevada.
That is correct.
Aye, aye, aye. All right. Hold on. Hold it right where you are, Mel. We're going to break here. We'll be right back. Current circumstances of the world considered, you should listen to the words of this song. because it's dead right. From the high desert, I'm with Mel Waters, and I'm Art Bell.
It's gonna take a lot of love to change the way things are.
Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
It is, and I've got Mel Waters here. We're getting the continuing saga, or at least closure to this point, of the Mel's Hole stories. That's plural. We'll get back to Mel in a moment. Once again, Mel Waters. Mel, Marilyn in Tulsa, Oklahoma asks, was there any sign of radioactivity? An obvious question.
I don't think these guys are capable of doing, you know, determining if that. None of the people have been around the hole in your state or the hole in Washington or this other site where the stove had gone into the ground, had experienced any sickness or anything that I guess would, you know,
be indicative of radio.
Anything that made him like truly sick.
Have you been back to our Nevada hole?
No, I have not. And the reason why is that I feel at this point I am, people can follow me around. I don't want to lead anyone there at this point. You know?
Have you detected people following you?
Well, I'll tell you, some of the people that I was trying to find have found me. I mean, and I have not left a trail of breadcrumbs out there. But so,
yeah,
I'm not
an easy guy to find.
I'm not an easy guy to find. In fact, that is also my message to Charlotte, and that is that I'm not around because people badger me all the time, even though I don't have a nickel in my pocket.
Actually, I would be aware of those you refer to. Let's not talk any more about it.
Okay. That's
listen,
it.
Listen. The hole in Nevada,
right.
Eventually, Mel, we've got to give scientists or
yes.
somebody access to one of these things.
I have a feeling.
Before the bulldozers come in with the suits and the military uniforms.
This has been my discussion with the Basque over there, is that at this point here, it's time to basically come clean on all of this stuff here, let someone
exactly.
from a university
exactly.
out there. They don't want, they're just there, you know. I mean, I can't see them profiting by it or anything. It's on public land. I mean, it doesn't belong to them.
A lot of people, of course, probably haven't heard this whole story, and I'll tell you now, Mel, we're going to take this segment, and we're going to repeat Mel's whole two on Christmas. And so we're going to take the segment we're in right now, play it back then. So Merry Christmas.
I'm going to tell you something, Art, and that is, boy, I sure got a lot of heat about the sheep and that...
Yeah, you want to briefly tell that again very quickly.
Well,
it is a central core.
This is good. Maybe I can lead into some more of this because there has been some more contact with.
Good.
That. Okay. What we did is some of the Basque were really like crazy, and they some of them wanted to be actually lowered into the hole, and that's after we brought that burning ice up to the ground.
Yeah.
And I said that, hey, you don't want to do this. You know, you don't want to send a human being down there. So they decided to lower sheep.
Yeah.
And they winched the sheep. Well, I don't want to get into the grisly details, but the sheep goes into the hole.
Right.
Goes down 1,000 feet. Bring the sheep up. Sheep is dead. They cut into the sheep. They find this huge tumor-looking sort of thing inside of it. These guys are used to eviscerating sheep, and they know this doesn't belong in there. They cut it open, and there's this thing that it's alive inside. It looks like a baby seal.
Yeah.
Like you see at the aquarium, you know, a pinniped, a baby seal. That's what it looks like. But the eyes are so odd. We all described it the same thing. It looked like it had eyes of a human being. You know, you look at a seal, picture of a seal, and it's got these black eyes.
Right.
This thing had like human looking eyes.
Oh man.
Okay, and we had experiences with it. I won't go into the whole thing, but what has happened here is that I have been told that the Basque have seen the same creature again and again, and they've had many experiences with the, well, I'm going to call it the seal creature. Now, you had a guy on your show, I'm told, is red, like red elk or red something.
Red elk, yes.
And he talked about these things. They're called rock flyers. And that's what he described them at. But he described these seal. He's like a Native Indian, kind of Native American sort of guy.
Yes.
And he described these things as being rock flyers.
Well, that's an interesting name for them, rock flyers.
And he said these creatures that live down in the earth, but what I'm getting is the sense that they not only live in the earth, but they inhabit like different earths, and they are able to move between them.
It's also possible, Mel, it's crossed my mind, that very, very deep within the earth, there might even be a different set of laws of physics that might begin to
be
a reality that you would live with, and maybe that's why you're getting such weird things up out of these holes.
Well, if I'm pulling up ice that keeps burning, and it's not cold, and I mean, something
sounds like a different kind of physics
going on here. If we've got this metal color that you cannot see from a certain distance and no longer registers on the mind or in the eye or in the retina.
Mm-hmm.
That's strange. I'll tell you something. Remember I told you I was given a replacement to the 1943 Roosevelt dime?
Yes, I recall.
After I was told about this thing here, and I tried to take pictures of it, believe me. Actually, I can't do any of that stuff. My nephew does. But this is what I discovered after I told that they couldn't see the flange from a certain distance.
Mm-hmm.
If I stand 15 feet away from the dime, I can no longer see it. I can see the holder. I've got it in a plastic, like, Lucite holder. I can see the holder, and I can see straight through it. Then I walk towards it, and all of a sudden, the dime inside the holder materializes. That's what it's like. So I assume that if it wasn't able to photograph, or not able to scan it, believe me, my nephew, he did everything he could to produce an image of this dime.
Right.
It could not do it. I'm holding it right in my hand as we speak. I still have it.
But you can't take a photograph of it.
I can't even, when it's 15 feet away.
What about the hole in Nevada? What about the hole in Washington?
Well, now, I've not been to the site of the hole, and I could assure you at this point that the hole in Washington it's probably been re-landscaped over there. So...
But the whole in Nevada
is still there as it was when I was there. It's out there in plain view.
We need some photographs. We really need some photographs.
Well, I'm going to communicate with the Basque out there and say, look, why don't we just have people come out there, find out where it is, from my standpoint, the stuff sounds dangerous. And you know, I was telling you about how they hauled away this wood stove that had a bucket of ice in it and how heavy it became. Are you familiar with any of the works by Kurt Vonnegut?
Of course.
Okay, he wrote a book called Cat's Cradle, and in that book, Cat's Cradle, there was a substance in there, fictional substance, called Ice Nine. And Ice Nine was developed for the military, fictional, so that the biggest scourge to the military is mud. So they developed a substance that could pour in the mud, and it would solidify the mud. And the problem with it, though, is that it would keep on solidifying all of the water out there as far as it could reach, and eventually it would destroy the planet if it continued to solidify. It absorbs all of the water. Well, scientists have actually speculated.
Is it something biological? I mean, I can't imagine.
I don't know.
Because it's hard to imagine what else could continue to proliferate instead of, unless it was some sort of biological agent. I know they have biological agents that clean up oil spills.
Yeah.
You know, they created creatures that eat oil.
I haven't thought of that. I never thought of this as a living thing. I always thought of it as a physical, chemical phenomenon.
Well, living things would be the one category that could continue to proliferate.
Anyway, this Ice Nine in fiction does that. It can literally attach itself to all the water and render it impossible to deal with. I mean, it would be no longer water. And you can imagine a world without water.
Yeah, of course.
Well, scientists have speculated. You can go on the Internet and search for, like, Ice Nine.
Yes.
And there are scientists that actually believe that something like Ice Nine can exist. They actually believe that it is possible to accomplish something like the fictional Ice Nine.
Well, that's why I kept saying, what about a different set of laws of physics inside the Earth? Obviously, something about the deep Earth, Mel, is very different than what we have here.
The whole new set of laws are down there that are going. But this ice has been, this burning ice has been a great, huge source of concern for all the people that I talked to, you know, and then military, whatever they were, down there, that went to the hole.
So you have no idea who has it now?
No, they took it away, and that was the report that I've got. And, excuse me. Anyway, I wanted to get back to the actual hole over there in your state. I told you about the helicopters that routinely fly over there, and apparently no one has been molested over there that is encamped around the hole. But the Basque that are there have told me that they receive visits from the seal-like creature.
Recalling for everybody, the creature went back down the hole.
I actually put him on the flange.
Right.
And he just dived in to the hole.
Like a seal into the water.
Exactly. Precisely like that. What I have been told is that the Basque have found a way of communicating with the seal, because it comes up regularly now. It's like a regular visitor. And what they did, and I don't know how they decided to do this, but the seal speaks to them through one of their boom boxes. So here you got the seal that's sitting there on the flange.
Mel, do you realize how crazy? this sounds.
I was crazy sounding from the first day.
you have a point, Mel. But I mean, the seal or whatever in God's name this is
can communicate to them
through a boombox,
through the radio on the boombox. That is, I don't know how it does it. I don't have any idea of how radio works. Okay.
Well,
I mean, you know, you're the radio guy.
It receives radio frequency.
That's
so
right.
The implication would be this creature is capable of. Radiating some sort of modulated radio frequency, and that's how it would happen.
I always heard these tales of like a people hearing like radio in their tooth filling.
Oh no, it's true.
And wire fences
really
out
true.
On the range.
It's all true.
You know, and so I don't know, but anyway, they have been communicating with them, and one of them was actually smart enough to press the record button on the boombox.
Good move.
Yeah. He did. But this is what happened when he played it back.
Yes.
It sounded like, I've listened to the shortwave radio before.
Yes.
But it sounded like that inner modulation that you get between, like, it's a series of chirps and bloops and bleeps and things like that.
Oh, yes.
That's what was recorded.
Oh, isn't that
bloops
interesting?
Bloops and bleeps and stuff. That's all that was on a tape. I used to like those bloops and bleeps because they used to help me sleep. You know, I would turn it in between like a shortwave channel.
Do you have that recording?
I don't have it handy, but...
But
it sounds exactly like that, the bloops and bleeps you get between some of the shortwave radio stations.
Wow.
Exactly. I have no idea, but that's... They were hearing this, you know, speaking to them in the language they understood. And so they talk about it. And again, I wasn't there, okay? But I don't think these guys, the Basque, are pulling my leg. They're not that kind of guy. They might be crazy enough to want to go into a hole.
Well, crazy as it may sound, it's not really crazy based on your own first-hand experience with the holes now, is it?
No. It isn't.
If you take one context as a reality, then you can. It seems to me it shouldn't be that hard for you to accept their word on what's happened here.
Right. And so, in that sense, but I'm also describing this to many, many, probably millions of people, I assume.
Probably, right? Yes.
And what I was told is that, that these creatures inhabit the Earth and they inhabit the other spaces linked and not linked together. And they're communicating through the radio to them is what's occurring. And they do receive visitations from the seal creature from time to time.
Well, I already like these little guys. If they use radio, they're my...
Are they your kind of people there?
You betcha.
Okay, now the Basque were warned about the ice that we sent down.
What kind of warning?
They said from the seal creatures that the ice can and would destroy the world in a very little amount of time. This stuff is too dangerous to fool around with. You don't have any way...
It's not supposed to be up here.
...of understanding how this works, even though it is so tempting that all of a sudden, in a bucket of ice, I've got what seems to be an unimaginable source of power. You know, an inexhaustible source of power, apparently. But I can't imagine if it's being inexhaustible if it's getting heavier and it's absorbing water. I mean, that to me doesn't sound like, you know, so I think that stuff that was down there really is truly dangerous if not contained properly, is my feeling on that there. And that's the warnings that they were giving. They said that the world would be destroyed by the improper use of the ice, but they anticipate that greedy and undisciplined use of the ice will probably occur in this world.
Greedy and undisciplined
use of the ice.
That's an interesting phrase.
Yeah. In fact, that's what was quoted to me, that term, greedy and undisciplined.
Well, you know, the world is looking, you know, for new power sources. Anything that burns, Mel, and changes its own weight in that manner has a great deal of power.
Hey, this kind of reminds me of something. We're a fossil fuel-based economy, right? And we've been using oil for last... 150 years, you know, crude oil, petroleum.
Long time.
Before that, the oil that we used was whale oil. And some of the most famous whalers in the world were the Basque.
That's true.
Now, I told you some time ago that there was a whale bone, and it's stuck in a tree in Ellensburg.
You know, I remember that.
And I've been told by the Basque that they left that there. That they were Basque in the area of the Washington Hole, and they left that whale bone there kind of as a marker. That's all I want to say about that, but that's what I've been told.
Do you think that somehow those beneath ground understood something about what we needed? Or what they thought we needed?
Well, I'll tell you this much, because there were other things that were said that... And this might explain some things to you, but, you know, we talked about the greedy and undisciplined use of the ice, and they
yes.
said that they these seal creatures, they can travel between these worlds, and that there are other people in other worlds that have designs on this world because this world is in pretty good shape. there are some people out there in other worlds that are similar to ours, but their world is so horrible.
Well, our world is at least above ground.
Yeah, but their world is so horrible that if we had suffered a nuclear holocaust on this world, they would be happy to inhabit it. There are people there, and what they were told is there are other worlds similar to ours that have designs on this world, and that they monitor what happens on this world, and they
okay,
are making...
Listen to me now. We're almost out of time,
okay.
Mel. Anything critical to get out?
Just that they are looking at our conditions, and they are saying, hey, the world that is the Earth that we know is on a collision course to disaster, and a lot of them think this is good, that then when we're gone, they can come here, and they think they're smart enough to use the ice that's here. That's the word I'm getting, okay? I'm not a prophet. I'm not anything. I'm just reporting.
Was the implication in that the ice was rare even to them?
The ice is rare, but it is when it's discovered, it's almost always improperly used. That no one has had the smartness. Now, these seal creatures...
Implication being there's been other pieces of this above ground.
In other similar situations there that have been used... And maybe it's been that some of this has surfaced in one of these holes, and you were saying maybe that's how these holes are formed.
Yeah.
Any number of those things.
All right, listen to me, my friend.
Yeah.
We've got to go.
That's fine.
I want you to tell me, swear to me that you'll get hold of some people at the University of Washington or wherever, and proceed with this, will you?
Talk to the Basque. I think they're thinking along my way. They have no real vested interest.
All right, I'm going to look for that to happen, Mel. You take care, my friend.
Thank you very much, Art Bell.
Good night, Mel Waters.
Bye.
Well, that was quite an update, wasn't it? Yeah, I know. But maybe it could be true. We'll be back.
From west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903.
As incredible as it may sound, and it's on an incredible website, it's on a website called the Fantastic Forum. There's a story about the brunette in ABBA, one of my favorite groups of all time, that brunette was the product of a Nazi breeding program in the Second World War, and there's a big story about her up there. It's very interesting, purports to come from the Observer. I assume that to be the London Observer. Extremely interesting article about the brunette in ABBA. Incredible. In later life, she's been a recluse. Coming up in a moment on a Friday night, Saturday morning, Some call him, many call him, Dr. Doom. Major Ed Dames. Stay right there. Now, Ed Dames, the world's foremost remote viewing teacher. He's major, U.S. Army, retired now. He's creator of technical remote viewing and director of the Technical Remote Viewing Institute, an original member of the U.S. Army Remote Viewing Training Program. He subsequently served as the training and operations officer for the Defense Intelligence Agency's Psychic Intelligence Collection Unit, PSIINT, and currently serves as executive director for the Matrix Intelligence Agency. I like that name, a private consulting group. And we will talk of many, many things tonight, indeed, with Major Dames. I can tell you a few things about Major Dames myself. One, I would say he is the most beloved and hated guest that I have on the air. Hardly anybody that I'm aware of evokes the kind of emotional response that does Major Dames. I'm serious about that. He scares the hell out of a lot of people, hence the nickname Dr. Doom. And a lot of people, of course, then respond with anger. But I can also tell you that over the years, many, many, many of the things that he told me would happen, happened. Including the malformation of frogs. He told me the UV would soon begin to destroy frogs, and of course that did occur, and he had that quite some number of years ahead of time. And many, many other things that he has indicated would happen have indeed happened. I have personally, I can tell you this, examined his military record, his entire military record. It was sent to me. And he did, in the military, exactly what he said he did. The entire CIA operation, which was revealed on a Nightline program with Ted Koppel, was, we now all know, an absolute fact. Our government had a secret remote viewing project ongoing. Remote viewing being the ability to see and picture things at a great distance. In that program, for example, gas canisters were discovered in Iraq and confirmed the location, then confirmed as they said it would be in so many other things. The military, in fact, had this program, and this man definitely was in this program. Now he's in the private sector. And in the private sector, he has caused some fair amount of havoc. There's no question about that. Here is Major Dames. Hi there, Ed.
Hey, Art. This is your last dance with Doom.
My last dance with Doom. And up on my website right now, there is under, you know, if you go to artbell.com, don't forget that commemorative CD. Your chance to order it, by the way, folks, is almost gone. At any rate, when you get up there, go to tonight's guest, Major Dames, actually programs tonight's guest info, and there will be the name Major Dames. And first item down is Major Doom and Gloom. And when you click on it, there's this really cool cartoon. It says Major Doom and Gloom coming your way. And there's a cute little dog there with a little rocket, and he's holding on to it as a dog would carry a cask to rescue you with a little rocket on the end of it. It's kind of a cute cartoon. Who did that?
That was Ben Lazzardi. Ben's been an artist for Disney and a number of yeah, excellent artist. He's one of my business partners on the Mind Dazzle project.
You could be an action figure in a comic, Ed.
Well, I've gone from feature films now with Ben Kingsley and Aaron Eckhart and Carrie Ann Moss, the Suspect Zero, all the way down to comic book characters. So full range of media.
It's really cool. I mean, that does look like the front of a really cool new comic book. Listen, can I run something by you before we even dive into where we're going? Email I just got. Dear Art, very sad you're leaving Coast to Coast. Also relieved that you will have Major Dames back on the program before the new year. Two questions. One, Major Dames discussed the remote viewing of a killer blight that induced gangrene within the joints of all those who ate it, a gangrene so severe the arms and legs fell off the individuals who ate the crops afflicted with the blight. Now, 2 weeks after you interviewed the major, I read a Tacoma News Tribune, or maybe Seattle Times article, the Associated Press story of a woman scientist who developed bioweapons for Saddam. Among the strains, blight and gangrene were mentioned within the same paragraph. Please ask the major if the gangrenous killer blight that was remote viewed is actually a strain developed by our or perhaps Iraq's military.
You want to answer that now, Art?
Sure.
Okay, the blight, no. The blight is an anti-crop weapon, an offensive biological weapon. I was this country's biological warfare case officer for many years as a science and technology case officer. And biological warfare was my assignment. So I helped write some of the national intelligence estimates that went to the President and the National Security Council on biological warfare.
Well, then I'm going to have a lot to ask you about
that. Yeah, I also helped get the funding from Congress to set up the Biological Threat Analysis Center, the BTAC, which is a top secret unit, place that analyzes biological warfare intelligence. So blight is an anti-crop weapon, and it's not connected with gangrene. The gangrene, as a weapon, as a microbe, is strictly just gangrene itself, and it's the organism itself. The gangrenous ergotism that I'm talking about is caused by ergot. Claviceps purpurea as one of the 32, 33 species of ergot from which LSD is derived. And by eating blighted plants that have ergot on them, if ergot's indeed this particular blight, one, an animal or a human can become ill, vomit. They can suffer hallucinogenic effects. We know that because of the LSD derivatives. But worst casing it, if you eat very blighted crops, very black grain, and if one is hungry, or if one feeds this to cattle, then the organism, a human or a cow, will develop gangrene, but a very interesting way. If it's a cow, the cow's tails will fall off, the ears will fall off, the appendages will fall off, right out of the horror movies, that kind of thing. And that is in the literature. You can do internet searches and find that. It's rare, but it happens. And it can also happen to any other mammal.
And this could be applied to a bioweapon.
Well, it's eating the blighted crop that causes that effect. So the blight itself doesn't cause that. The blight attacks the crop, grasses, maize, corn, wheat, all of the food.
I know, but all of that somehow makes it into the food chain, Ed.
Yes, but all I'm saying is that the blight itself,
gotcha.
The ergot itself, does not cause the gangrene. It's two; these are two separate things.
It surprise you to hear blight and gangrene used in the same paragraph in that sort of a story, you know, about bioweapons?
No, not at all. Those are very applicable to offensive biological warfare.
How?
If you want to attack a nation, you know, you attack their crops as well.
And, you know, since you were a biowarfare expert, though it's been some time, you would have some sense. I mean, everybody's talking about biowarfare right now. You should have some sense, one way or perhaps even the other, of exactly the threat that America's facing right now in terms of what might be unleashed on us.
Correct. So if you have any questions, this is our
opportunity. I have a hell of a lot of questions. What kind of things do you believe that we're facing, possibly?
The continental United States is not really under a great threat, Art. The population centers, because there's such a density of people, they're if we were attacked by a biological warfare agent, a microbe, it would not be one that's genetically engineered necessarily. That's number one. It would be your typical epidemiological factor, smallpox or something like that. And it could be controlled. Yes, there would be an epidemic for a while, but it would be controlled. So the science fiction scenarios are just that. The genetically engineered organisms really would not take us all out. Having said that, however, you can take something like anthrax, okay? And you can tweak it in a certain way so that it is more infective. It's much more of a toxicological infective agent.
Well, in what sense? In other words, you could absorb it with your skin, for example. The stuff they got in Washington, some absorbed through their skin, some was inhaled. It took very little, apparently, but both of those ways.
No, it isn't absorbed through the skin. It has to go through a cut. Or inhaled, particularly inhaled, too. And what you can do is essentially put it in a vat, and just like you breed a dog, make a strain that's very, very infective. And you can also manipulate the strain so that if you had, let's say, a vaccine for the weapon that you were developing, you could tweak the molecular end, where the last peptide group is, the thing that sticks out like a locking key,
right,
pokes into the proteins in your body and yourself, you could tweak that so that a vaccine against smallpox or anthrax would not work.
Oh, my God. Do you believe that Iraq might have the scientists capable of that kind of manipulation?
No. But what they have is the former Soviet scientists that did that, and so that's what they have.
Well, then they've got it.
Yes, I would assume that they do.
And so, I mean, here we just went through a big national thing about smallpox vaccine. Even the first lady, I heard her on the radio saying, I wouldn't be afraid to have my children get their smallpox vaccinations. And then I hear later warnings, days later, it would be dangerous, one in so many would die and all the rest of it. And they're talking about possibly vaccinating the entire country. And you're telling me they've got something that would ignore that vaccination altogether?
Smallpox is a very infective disease, and it spreads rapidly. So I wouldn't use smallpox against the U.S. I would use anthrax and one that was genetically manipulated, because we don't have an anthrax vaccine. And we wouldn't have time to develop a vaccine against a new form of anthrax. I can't go in too much detail about this, because there's still some things that are classified. But,
let's see. You were last actively doing this work when?
Up until 1991.
So they've had since 1991 to refine and modify and make even more horrible whatever it is they were doing that you knew about then? Or have you gone back, Ed? Have you remote viewed? Have you looked and checked in any way on what kind of progress in the biological world there's been?
Let me say this, Art. The natural occurring microbes are far more dangerous these days than any man-made factor for two reasons. One, the global warming, and for instance, 1 degree or 6 degree temperature rise in an area,
yes,
or even a few degrees temperature rise in the area,
yes,
the ergot that we were talking about,
yes,
there produces six times as many spores for a few degrees rise in temperature.
Plus, north and south, at the north side of the world, south side of the world, Ed, we have scientists drilling into the ice, trying to recover, and in fact, recovering microbes thousands of years old. I read a story just the other day, add a little water and a little heat, and voila, they come alive.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got global warming doing slowly, or maybe not so slowly, what those scientists are doing as well, uncovering all of these things that probably ought to stay covered up.
Well, 2 points. One, the naturally occurring organisms that have evolved naturally over long periods of time are far more virulent than anything that man can make. Because when you tweak something, when you genetically engineer it,
yes,
it's okay for a while, but then it reverts back to its natural state. Think of dogs.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's not viable for too long. And even certain organisms out in the sunlight are denatured in 30 minutes. Anthrax, for instance, anthrax spores, you put them in the sun, in bright sunlight, in 30 minutes, you know, the peptide bonds are broken by the ultraviolet rays of the sun. However, if you keep them in the shade or under the ground, they're viable for 1,000 years or more. So it's sunlight is important. But think of if you genetically engineer an organism and you tweak it and it's not natural, I'm sure human clones may be the same way.
Yes.
But think of the dog. If you stop breeding dogs, dogs would revert back to their natural state. Probably the dingo dog and the wolf were the two primal breeds.
Yeah, probably.
They will not keep, they're not viable anymore. And so when you tweak something that is a naturally occurring microbe, and it's going to revert back to its less virile state. For a while, it'll be very virile. Now, there are agents, biological agents, and agents of biological origin, for instance, toxins, that are extremely viable. This nation, in 1972, wanted unilaterally to abandon its offensive biological warfare program, had a couple of toxins that were extremely effective. I'm not talking about the parrot fever that we used in the Korean War. I'm talking about something far, far more virulent than that. At the picogram levels per cubic meter, there it would go through you like stuck through a goose. And we did not use that, but other nations know about those things.
It scared us so badly that we essentially signed treaties to stop doing it, that kind of thing?
Well, it was getting close to developing a doomsday machine. I mean, there's a point that's reached where the things that you're making are nonsensical, because if they get loose, you yourself don't have defenses against it.
Well, if you've got some hungry Russian scientists, Ed, and you get them to Iraq and you begin to help them lead the high life for a while, and you want them to develop something really awful, presumably they would have the expertise to do that.
And no compunction not to. I've debriefed many Russian defectors from
I've been trying to figure out, Ed, no one's told me exactly why we're about to go to war. If they've got something of this magnitude, then I understand why we're about to go to war. If that's true, then why don't they tell us?
We're about to go to war because they would. The Iraqi government will continue to foster terrorism, so we got to put a clamp on it. That's why we're going to do it. And yes, they do have biologicals. But I don't think, and they would use them. The intent to use them is why we're about to go to war. That's
all right, well, hold it right there. Yeah, the intent to use them. That can be discerned from the history of their having used them. Would they hesitate to turn them loose on us, the most hated country in the world from their point of view? Probably not for a second. Could they get somebody across our porous borders to set something loose? Probably so. Maybe that's why we're about to go to war. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell.
Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903.
So who wants to live forever? Anyway, Major Ed Dames is here. They call him Dr. Doom for good reason. I'm Art Bell, and I'd suggest you keep tracking with us through the night if you've got it in you. And a bit of a warning, some of this is going to be very, very scary stuff. Some of it perhaps very, very real. And so if you can't handle that kind of stuff, or if there's kids around, do the adult thing and turn the radio off. That may even apply to you. Ed Dames, back in a moment. Well, all right. right, for somebody who was in charge of this aspect, obviously anything else you can tell us about bioweapons? I mean, you were right. The Iraqis have proven that they will use this. They did so on the Kurds. And if you will use it on the Kurds, then surely you will use it on the all-hated United States of America.
Aren't they used chemical weapons on the Kurds?
Yeah, but yeah, I know. But mass killing is mass killing, and the intent is there. So if they'll do that kind of thing to the Kurds, why not us?
As long as they're not, it's not attributable to them, because there's hell to pay.
Hell to pay. Well, you know, maybe there's more common sense prevailing in Iraq than we give them credit for. But I mean, on a regular basis, people from that part of the world are blowing themselves up in Israel just to kill, suicide to kill, suicide to kill. I mean, that carries a message, willing to die to kill. So I guess it makes a difference who's in charge there, eh?
It does. It does.
So that's the kind of thing we should beware of, the more natural things that are given perhaps a little extra twist, something like that, huh?
Well, in terms of microbes, we're talking nuclear terrorism, that's one thing. But in terms of microbes and biological warfare, right now, it's the problem is the natural outbreak of nature's striking back, or nature's response or reaction to ecological collapse,
global warming
in those countries. That's the problem that we face right now.
Really interesting. Let me tell you why that's so interesting, Ed, because last night I had Sylvia Brown on. Sylvia Brown's a psychic, a very good psychic, and normally she's really an upbeat gal. And last night, you know what she said?
I listened to 2 hours of that.
You know what she said? She said that this earth is, in fact, striking back. That's exactly what it's doing right now. And she said something else, Ed, that I want to take up with you. And she said that at some point, there's something, some wall that she can't see past, Ed, and to her it means it's the end of time.
That stopped me in my tracks, because that's the same thing that I've been telling I have a professional team, a world-class team of remote viewers.
It's the same thing you've told us?
It's
that there was this wall.
The word itself is the same word I've used, and that was independent of me, the end of time. And that's what I've been saying in the last few weeks to my crew. I feel it's the end of time. And when she said that, I was really enjoying listening to her. I don't necessarily agree with everything, but she's very enjoyable to listen to.
Ray from Trenton, New Jersey says, happy holidays. Time. Will it end? Did it ever begin? Is there a present, past, future, or just an eternal here and now that's always been and always will be? What does Ed Dames see when he remote views the concept of time? What does he see happening on the earth 1,000 years from now? What does he see happening on the earth 1,000,000 years from now? And the answer is, you also hit some kind of wall?
I'm not worried about 1,000,000 or 50,000 or 5 years from now. We're looking at 2003. And as far as I'm concerned, the bridge is out ahead. And that's why it was enjoyable to listen to Sylvia until she said that. And now, you know, that struck a real responsive chord, because I had planned on a national workshop tour, teach remote viewing. I have 3 months of workshops, but I don't have any workshops planned past March, because I something wicked this way comes. I do not feel
middle of the year.
Yes, Art.
In fact, that's barely. It's not even really the middle of the year. That's March.
Well, I stopped in March because I want to dig in personally and just dig in. I feel that one thing, just one thing. Although we're facing a confluence of events. I was going to call this program Bell's Hells, for whom the bell tolls.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty grim, as far as I'm concerned. For years, I've been stating that the next nuclear weapon that will be used in anger will be on the Korean Peninsula.
I'm well aware, yes.
Yeah, I think it's this year. And, you know, people say, oh, no, it's over the Kashmir issue and it's in South Asia. I stand by the North Korean thing. The North Koreans and the Chinese have a lot to gain by the use of by the Koreans doing that. They don't necessarily have a sub rosa agreement to support it, but they have a lot to gain by North Korea popping a nuke.
I know you've been saying this for years now. And why do the Chinese have a lot to gain? You would think the disruption of their own region would be something they'd want to prevent.
It, it, they it won't be disrupted. What will happen is you'll probably have use of one weapon. We'll have a ground war, started a ground war in Korea. I think the scenario that I see is that the North Koreans will pop a nuclear weapon near the DMZ, which is far enough away from mainland China so that it won't be too damaging to mainland China, but extremely damaging to the Korean Peninsula, militarily effective, because it is a peninsula. And so our response, of course, would be the desire to use nuclear weapons in response, but we won't. Because if you look at the proximity of North Korea to China, there is no way the Chinese would allow us to use a nuclear weapon.
That's a good point.
So that would mean we'd have to go it'd have to be a ground war. And the North Koreans are not the Iraqis. The American soldier we're not necessarily Pillsbury doughboys, but we're awful soft compared to the North Koreans. Those people are solid rock, and we will lose a lot of American GIs in a ground war there. And so it's going to have to be a ground war because Chinese are not going to allow us to use nuclear weapons there. And Japan isn't that far away either, so they will beg us not to use them either. Now, this is the opportunity when we're caught up in a ground war there, when we invade North Korea, for the Chinese to take Taiwan, and they'll do it.
Yeah, they would.
They'll do
and
it because
we'll be
stretched so thin on two fronts.
I'm sure there'd be some behind-the-scenes quid pro quo to that effect. I can imagine that, actually.
Yeah.
Politically.
There'll be an agreement that, you know, go ahead and take it so to avoid war with China. It's the way it is. That will be a sub-Rosa agreement.
You know, I really can see that happening. I really can see that happening. Mm-hmm. And you think that's going to be this year?
Yeah, I do, Art. I actually do.
What gives you the confidence that you don't normally have regarding timelines to say you think it's that close? What led you there?
Well, we can't do it using remote viewing necessarily. We could look at the nearest event, and we have, but all we get is war in the Mideast. So that's too spread out as an event. If you look at the way things are going right now, it's tactically very sound for China to push North Korea. North Korea is primed to use the 1.5 weapons that they have at this juncture. They're mad as pismires. And it's a perfect timing. Because, you know, once we finish up in Iraq, we're gonna go right to North Korea. Why should they wait for that to happen? I wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
If you were Kim Jong-un, would you wait? I wouldn't. I wouldn't do that at all.
So,
I'd wait till we were caught up and we were using all our inventory of cruise missiles up in the Iraqi war.
Yes.
And then I'd start a ground war on the Korean Peninsula. And when Americans were engaged, then I would use a weapon.
Do you have any sense? Let's just pull back for a second. We're obviously about to go to war with Iraq. We're about to go to war. Do you have any sense of how this is going to unfold? I mean, there are so many worries about the spread of the whole mess in the Middle East once that begins. And I'm not so sure that some people we think are on our side are really on our side, superficially perhaps, but,
I think that one thing, I don't have a sense, it's too complex for me to get a grasp on, even as a remote viewer. It's too complex, this situation, the geopolitical situation. But I do see it as the catalyst for an economic collapse in the United States. That I do see.
Well, that could be underway right now.
Correct. And this will catalyze that.
You predicted that, of course, as well. In fact, here, the second part of this same email says, please inquire of the major about further remote viewing into the collapse of our nation's economy. I've been really concerned about this since his last visit. Our economy seems a lot more fragile than I thought that it was, Ed. After the 9/11 disaster, you know, America used to shake this kind of thing off, even something as awful as 9/11, but I mean, it put a dent in the economy, and that dent is becoming a big dent.
Right. The printing presses are running as fast as they can right now.
Yeah.
But we're going to burn them up. and there's going to be nothing left to print anymore. This will stretch us so thin. I mean, look at California. Right now, I'm in the City of Angels. I go back to the Island of Doom tomorrow morning, the Sandwich Islands. And by the way, there's no longer any excuse for you now that you're pulling the plug for you and Ramona not to come and visit Vivian and I in the Sandwich Islands.
Well, that may well occur anyway. As you know, my wife was born in Hawaii, mm-hmm. and so we definitely will visit. But
I'll show you my lair.
Your lair, huh? That place where you're gonna just ride it out.
Right.
It will be something we can ride out.
Well, no, it's gonna affect everybody. Everybody, and nobody's gonna. The entire world is gonna suffer on this one. This is catastrophic. And I agree with Sylvia Brown that it's so big, it's so very big. There's something almost supernatural ahead. It's so very big.
Almost supernatural.
Yes. This is not just like World War II or World War I. It's not just like a world war. There's something else out there.
A lot of people are saying something may be approaching the planet, Ed.
It isn't just that either, Art. It isn't just the physical Nibiru coming in or something like that. It's something I can't grasp. My colleagues and I are actually acting on that information. We're doing something else that deals with Project Starman, which was a success. I'll talk about that in the show. I wanted to mention that to you before you. You pull the plug. That
mm-hmm.
Project Starman was a success, and in fact, we think that it's very important.
A success. I mean, in what way? What?
Contact. Yeah, contact.
Contact. All right. Let's hear a little bit about that.
There's so many. You and I both share one interest, and that's UFOs.
Yes.
We both love the area. It's so fascinating.
Of
and
course.
You can imagine that if you have a tool, you have a team of world-class remote viewers,
yes.
that you're certainly going to turn your attention to that, and we have. But because we have limited resources, what do we look at? Over the years, the last 7 years or so that I've been on your show, we've talked about many, many things that remote viewers have looked at, vis-a-vis the UFO ET phenomena, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was about five or six years ago, I was invited to Germany to speak at a UFO conference. In fact, that conference, I busted Ray Santilli's alien autopsy scam. But at that conference, John Mack was there. I have a lot of respect for John Mack. He has really stuck his neck out.
He's an amazing man.
Yes. Well, there was one thing at that conference that was worth the price of admission. It was worth me traveling to Germany for. Dr. Mack had a video of an event that happened in a school in Rua, Zimbabwe. And he went there himself to interview the children at the school's called Ariel School in Rua, Zimbabwe. On the 16th of September, 1994, during, I think, a lunch break at a school, the kids who were 8 to 12,
yes.
walked off a basketball court and left the older kids behind. The older kids didn't think much of it. These kids took off into the brush, about 20 of them.
Yes.
And they came back with an amazing story. And it's just yet one of those myriad UFO stories. But this one really struck a responsive chord in me because it was children. The children reported and sketched, and John Mack interviewed each one of them. And that interview was on film. But I think the parents would not allow the release of the film, so it never really made it out into the public.
Can you relate the contents roughly?
Yes. The children said there was a saucer-shaped thing in the trees, and there were four or five entities that they saw standing there. And the kids were mesmerized by this, afraid and yet attracted,
yes.
sort of magnetized in place. And they heard telepathically a message. And the message was that, and each was interviewed independent of another, so they didn't mutually corroborate their stories. They were taken aside and interviewed independently. Each of the children said that these entities telepathically communicated a message that said they were very sad and that our planet is dying
and that if we don't take steps now, the planet will die. Typical, you know, sort of a typical story, UFO abduction experience story.
Yeah, well, they're beginning to get to be awfully similar all around the world right now, Ed.
Well, what we did was concentrate only on this event instead of spreading ourselves thin and looking at all of this, the various and sundry phenomena connected with. We looked only at this event.
So you used this as a point for contact?
We used it as a reference point to study. Because we were interested in the source. First of all, we don't take reports at face value because many times it's an illusion.
Right.
You get the Wizard of Oz pulling strings, and that's what's out there really is illusory. We'll talk more about that when I talk about the Roswell incident later. And in this case, we wanted to know what the source of that contact, the agency or the source behind that event. What was the source behind the message? And that's what my Top Guns and I went after. What was the source? Because our desire was to elicit and to maintain contact with that source and then get a very prominent person in Hollywood, whose name I will not mention, who is very well respected, to actually film the contact, to look at the protocols for establishing and maintaining contact with the source, whatever they may be, a higher intelligence, that's for sure, and to film it, a very credible source. So that's what we're doing now.
Holy mackerel.
And then to take that message again, to see if there's any more to that message or any more whatever, and to have a prominent filmmaker portray that message to the public. No screenplay writer this time.
Message,
a real CE3.
This message, though, you're convinced is the real thing?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether it is or not. These entities, this agency, is higher intelligence. They can do whatever they want to us. And, you know, the world's facing, we're on the eve of destruction here. You might as well go to a higher intelligence and see if they have any ideas and maybe even ask for some help. Who cares what they are? What do we got to lose?
Well, if that's true, nothing.
That's right. We might have something to gain. They might say, oh, glad you asked. Here, we'll neutralize your atomic weapons or something like that. And you'll have to fight with sticks. I don't know. I don't know what to expect here. We know a lot about...
How much information do we have on the path to destruction unless there's change? I mean, how sure of that part are we?
I'm not sure about anything anymore. All I know is that I feel the same way Sylvia Brown does. There's so much happening so fast. That statement, the end of time, that just stopped me in my tracks.
Because stopped me, too.
It's allegorically and metaphorically the way I feel.
And it's totally, it's totally out of character for Sylvia. I mean,
is it?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know her that well.
Totally out of character.
I want to marry King Joe. I know he likes her.
Well, she's liked by millions, for the psychic work she does.
She sounds like salt of the earth.
But I'll tell you something. She's never come close to saying the kind of thing that she said last night about the end of time. Never. And
yeah, it really caught me. Really caught me.
So you're saying through Starman, really the same message is there, the exact same message, perhaps in a slightly different form, but pretty damn close if you ask me.
Well, our goal is to recontact that the source behind that. And when we know we've been successful there. But we want it filmed by a very respectable filmmaker so that the film can be disseminated to people. And everybody will be aware of it, so you don't have to use me or someone else as a medium, so that it's available to everyone. And then we can assess it corporately.
All right, Ed, hold on. We're at the top of the hour. Major Ed Dames is my guest, and you just heard a little bit about Project Starman. I'm Art Bell. This, of course, in the nighttime, is Coast to Coast AM.
Kingdom of Nye from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
One more time around with Major Ed Dames. Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. This is serious stuff we're into tonight, as usual with Ed. More of it in a moment. Back now to Major Ed Dames. Major, this contact, where do you imagine this contact may lead? Where may you go with it?
I my best guess about where we're what we're contacting is our progenitors, the gardeners.
The gardeners?
I for all intents and purposes, I think they're our progenitors. I think they're the ones who planted us here.
Planted us here.
So you know, we're essentially, it's the 2001 Space Odyssey scenario where the monolith and you're looking at technologies that are nominally 100 million years ahead of us. Technology is a misnomer in that regard. So
they're technically our creators.
I think that they are. I actually feel that way. And
now that
I
does not
time,
that
I,
doesn't negate the concept of a creator.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. The creator is much further away in eternity. You know, and these are kind of like middlemen, so to speak. Who knows what they are? But I feel that we have. At least remote viewing data to suggest that they are our progenitors, and they have been manipulating life on Earth. They have in the past, especially in the Rift Valley.
Boy, there's something to think about, that we're nothing but a big crop.
Well, I think we're pretty important to them. I mean, it's more possibly like a parent-child relationship more than a crop, but I don't know that for sure.
That's better.
I think that if that's the case, then it's time to give the keys back. The keys of the kingdom or the keys of the car, whatever you say. Like, hey, Dad, take them back. I think it's time for intervention. But we may have to ask for intervention before they take them back themselves.
Do you have any idea of why that would be, why we would have to ask for intervention? I mean, a parent seeing its child floundering or even dying is going to usually act immediately.
I don't know. I don't know if we have to ask for intervention, but, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained. I don't know what the agenda is. I don't know what their agenda is. I do know that we are successful in establishing contact, so we're doing something right. In the past, when I've had high-level scientists out at sites, we've gotten nothing more than flybys, things punching through into this atmosphere, flying by and punching back out.
Yes.
But this time, it's very different, and that's why we want it filmed. So corporately, people can, you know, people who in the world can judge the data for themselves and make up their own minds rather than having it mediated by somebody like me or you.
Would you take the responsibility yourself to ask for intervention if you get that opportunity?
This agency, these entities can read you. They can read everything. They can see ahead in time. So they already know what your intent is. There's no, you don't have to ask anything.
No, but you, I have to ask. Your current state of thinking. What I asked you was, given the opportunity, Ed, would you ask for intervention?
I'd ask for help. I'd just call it help. I mean, that's all I would say is, you know.
That's
help.
Also interesting because last night Sylvia said something about exactly that, that there would not be direct intervention, but at some point after something happened, then we might be able to get some assistance. That's really interesting.
I think we have to display a higher degree of wisdom. Otherwise, over the years, the last 20 years of looking at this phenomenon with both the military team and my higher level civilian team, which we have, our capabilities now are much, much more refined than they were 20 years ago. The idea is that this system out there, this control system, is not going to deal with inferior types. They're going to deal only with a higher level of wisdom. Think of the parables that Christ said. Christ talked about. The idea of why did Christ speak allegedly in parables? Why couldn't he just lay it on the line? And mm-hmm. some people were there saying, I don't know what he said. You don't understand? No, I don't understand. I was just here for the fish or whatever. But others, you know, there'd be a few folks who would just lie in bed and awake trying to figure out what he meant, knowing that it was important. I think that's the conundrum that the UFO problem presents. It presents itself as a nonsense, total nonsense. I mean, you and I could go back in ufology and point out some of the most nonsensical things.
Of
but
course.
It's just the Wizard of Oz pulling, you know, whistles and bells. Behind that is a control system that wants us to figure it out. Otherwise, it would hide. It's not. It's projecting illusions and nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
So this,
yeah,
this thing, this consciousness tool, that is my stock in trade now, thanks to the taxpayers of the United States who paid to have remote viewing turn into a skill.
Yes, we did.
That has enabled us to get behind the curtain and look at the wizard, tap the wizard on the shoulder allegorically and say, excuse me, you know, we see you. And now the agenda changes, picture changes. What do you do now when your kid, when you play hide and go seek and your kids find you?
Yeah. So you'll be, that, in other words, this is the road you're now pursuing, contact.
That's almost 80%. I stopped teaching professional courses. I'm only teaching workshops now once a month, for the next 3 months, Portland, Albuquerque, and Seattle.
You know, it's interesting. I got an email from one of your students who said, boy, you're hard on your students. He said, but he said, you know, he deserved it, that you picked up a paper and made a disparaging comment about some of his work. He said, you're a tough taskmaster, but he had good things to say. You know, he was at one of your
workshops.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Not a professional course.
Yeah,
the workshops,
yeah.
I'm just as tough in the workshops as I am. I mean, I can't teach you how to run with the big dogs in the workshops, but I sure as heck am going to make sure that you don't leave until you get the skills down, because if my students in the workshops fail, it's my fault, not theirs. I'm a bad teacher. I'm going to make sure they represent, you know, the skill. They can leave with the skills.
Huh. Very interesting. Anyway,
we have workshops in Portland, Albuquerque, and Seattle.
Yeah, he thought you were a very good teacher. I mean, he did say that, but he said you were tough. let me just shift course for a moment here on a few other things that I definitely want to cover. Recently, Ed, I think certainly since the last time you were on, there was this big brouhaha up in Albany, New York. A reporter, you know, for a television station, this was the damnedest thing. He was doing some sort of interview, and he caught, not visually when he did the videotaping, but later when they looked back at it, they caught something on film that appeared to some to be maybe a missile. Now, I took one look at it, and in just a fraction of a second, mentally, I knew damn well it was not a missile, something I guess the FBI or whoever confirmed wasn't a missile, but it was something, Ed, and there's no question about what it was. It was a rod.
Mm-hmm.
It was a classic rod. I mean, it was not something you had to imagine. I talked to Jose Escamilla, who believes these are living creatures, you know, sharing the earth with us, and there's no question about what that was. Absolutely, that was a rod. Duh. I mean, people talked about other things. It was a rod, you know, and I know, crazy as that sounds, even the concept of rods, I'm familiar enough with the videotape and Jose's stories and plenty of photographs and video footage to know exactly what I was looking at. Sure, it was a rod, and I know you've done some looking into rods, haven't you?
I have indeed, yes. Yeah, sort of, I find them fascinating. We would have never turned our remote viewing skills onto them unless somebody pointed it out, because you can't look at everything.
That's right.
And so our cameras, modern-day cameras, pick these things up. What are they? And I also felt that they were, you know, simply living creatures that evolved here alongside everything else, some different phylum. You know, I even had a name for it. I called them Eolium. But it turns out, they're more interesting than one might think. They're not just a new phylum on Earth. They're not just another living thing. If you were a control system, or you were trying to control a population,
yeah.
and tweak them and get them to do what you want, or at least monitor them. You have to have monitoring devices, don't you?
Of course.
Mm-hmm. What rods are technology.
Oh.
They're living technology. They have adaptive behavior by design.
Huh.
They have a nesting spot on Middle Caicos Island in the Caribbean. And if you set your cameras up there, it looks like a beehive.
Really?
Yeah, they park themselves. They're called a nest. But they actually belong to this control system. And they're everywhere. They're essentially spies. They gather intelligence. They gather information. They spread about
these,
all over the darn earth.
But these are living things?
They're living things, yes.
Are they designed living?
Yes, they're designed. They're
designed living things.
Uh-huh. They're not an evolved life form. They're a design life form. Now, I know you think you got let's say you have a civilization that's nominally 100 million years ahead of us. This is not a problem to make something like this, Art. Especially when I tell you about the Roswell event, what went down there. You'll see that making something like a rod that gathers intelligence and is not a problem.
Ed, what sort of entity manufactured these to gather the intelligence?
I don't know about entity, but the intelligence is passed to a subterranean location on Mars, on the planet Mars, and that's the fusion center, if you will. Fusion center is the term we used to use in intelligence where all the information comes and is collected and analyzed, right?
Beneath the surface of Mars.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That projection booth that I've talked about in the past, that sort of transmits a signal that is like a physical mass accumulator. It transmits a pattern and puts things together. I'll elaborate upon that.
Well, you've been talking about the below the surface of Mars now, also for years.
Mm-hmm. Very active.
Does this it relates to all of that?
Yeah, the surface of below there. That is an action center. It transmits things. The pyramidal UFOs that we see in the sky. I mentioned that in the last show. We'll go over that again too, because it has a bearing upon the Roswell incident. The final word I have on the Roswell incident is connected with the subterranean projection booth on Mars and also fusion center.
This is perhaps totally irrelevant, or maybe it's not irrelevant, but I could swear I've seen rods in peripheral vision. And you know something? I mentioned that because earlier tonight, Ed, before the program, I was standing near the doorway to my room, and I've got a computer immediately to my right, and I noticed the damnedest thing, and that is when I was looking straight ahead, not trying to see the computer to the side, or the monitor, I should say, but looking straight ahead, I began to see the flicker rate of the monitor in my peripheral vision. And I said, wow, this is really something. And I called Ramona in, and she could see it herself. Not when you look straight at the monitor, it looks okay.
Right.
But in peripheral vision, I could begin to see the flicker rate, kind of the way you see the flicker rate if it's not set high enough. With a video camera, trying to take a picture of a monitor, you'll either see a bar or you'll see the flicker rate or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But I've never seen it with my own eyes until I caught it with peripheral vision. And it's almost like you can see slightly a higher frequency in your peripheral vision. And I wonder if that is what occasionally lets you think you've seen something going very fast, like a rod.
Well, the TV, it could have been a beep frequency, a reflection of something else in the room that allowed you to do that. I'm not sure. But
could
the
have
rods,
been.
Birds can see rods. Sometimes you'll take a picture of a bird. I'm an avid bird watcher. And sometimes a bird will just look at something in the sky.
Yeah.
You swing your binoculars and there's nothing there. And it'll track it and then go back to doing whatever it's doing.
Ditto, I think, for cats.
Probably. Yeah. But a bird has to react pretty fast.
Very quickly.
Cats have to react quickly because they catch birds.
That's right. Yes, that's right. But you'll see cats frequently, chase briefly something imaginary, and there's nothing at all to have caused that motion. There's nothing that the human saw that moved quickly at all, but the cat saw it. And I've seen that a million times with cats because I've got them. So
that's because they're genetically disenfranchised.
Genetically disenfranchised?
They're insane. Cats are insane.
Sometimes they truly are. Yes, it's true. Sometimes cats are. They act in an insane manner. It's definitely true.
Let's talk about this Roswell event.
Yeah, let's. You say you've got the definitive word on Roswell, the final word.
As far as
word.
I'm concerned.
Oh, you do, huh?
The final word.
All right.
It's been a bugbear for us for a long time because the technologies involved, it really was an alien event. I mean, it wasn't a weather balloon or anything else like that. Many people, reasonable people, will agree there's something alien behind it. Well, as remote viewers, as skilled remote viewers, we knew that too, but we couldn't figure it out because it's just so difficult to figure out. It looked, and the problem was, when you remote view the location of any debris or wreckage, you cannot find it.
You know the famous picture, right, of the general kneeling down and the little sort of aluminum foil and junk on the floor. They had this thing on Fox. I hope you saw it, Ed.
No, I don't watch television.
I'll
be on television, a special about missing children this year, but I don't watch it.
Okay, but here's my point. They decoded what the general was holding in his hand. That was a disinformation photo op. However, they digitally enhanced the message that the general was holding in his hand, and guess what, Ed? It confirmed what we have all thought about Roswell. It used the word victims, some kind of bodies. It had in it this message he was holding in his hand, the word disc and recovered and victims and stuff like that. All kinds of things that they found in this message the general was holding.
There was stuff on the ground. I'm going to attest to that. There was a lot of stuff on the ground, and there was an impact, okay? So I'll be the first one to say yes, but I will tell you right now to preface what I'm going to say. There is nothing, not a single thing extant now today, except for some the marks that were left on the ground. There is no physical evidence, and you will never find it for the following reasons. This projection booth on Mars.
Yes.
It can project a template into the Earth's atmosphere, probably anywhere.
A template.
A template. Think of a hologram.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Instead of just projecting an image, a holographic image into the atmosphere, think of that image capable of collecting carbon atoms and oxygen and nitrogen in the air and assembling them into something solid. Okay. In other words, you create a tool at a distance, a remote tool, and you tweak your transmitter to make anything you want, a Bigfoot, a pyramid-shaped UFO, an alien standing somewhere, whatever. And it has mass and weight, and so it leaves tracks in the ground. If you shoot it, pieces come off of it, those kinds of things, right?
Yes.
But if you turn your projector off, it vanishes.
It goes away.
It goes away.
As we will for a second here. Bottom of the hour. Major Ed Dames is my guest. And he's talking about contact. And he's talking about what happened at Roswell. We'll continue with that in a moment. I'm Art Bell.
Oh,
in the Kingdom of Nye. From west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
It's a little bit like the Matrix when you think about it, the creation of something tangible that's as real as it can be while it's being projected. And then suddenly in a flash, it's gone. Once again, here's Major Ed Dame. So, from beneath the surface of Mars, things are projected. Things, all kinds of things that we put into a sort of a paranormal category. From Bigfoot to UFOs to other things that, like Quicksilver, are gone. Can be caught by cameras, but like Quicksilver, they're gone without a trace. And so you're saying they're created.
Saying that there's a physical mass accumulation at the point of projection, and that you can at the projection booth, you can program the projector to transmit anything you want, and you can imagine the effect down here. We know what the effects are. There's a good analogy when British explorers and earlier in the last century, anthropologists took motion picture projectors into Africa.
Yes. Is it like Ed? Is it like teleportation? In other words, are the original materials, let's say, on Mars?
Negative.
No.
No. There is no exchange of materials.
Okay.
It's what happens here in the atmosphere is where this thing is pointed. There is a coagulation, an accumulation of carbon or nitrogen or oxygen, whatever the thing is doing. Physical atoms come together, stick together, long as this pattern is maintained.
So the materials actually come from here.
Yes, yes. It's taken right out of the atmosphere. Lots of carbon, nitrogen, oxygen.
Yep, of course.
Put them together somehow, make a solid thing out of it, smash it into the ground, make a green or gray alien, whatever you want. And you'd stoop over it, and it looks at you, and it could be, you know, but it's not going to be there. It's going to evaporate or melt like ice.
All right. Let's assume for a second this is so. What possible motivation could there be for the creation of these Quicksilver-like wonderment items here on Earth? Why do this, Ed?
I think over the last 20 years of studying this and chasing it around the desert and various places hither and yon and having some degree of success in terms of contact, I think it's to keep us looking up. It presents itself so that it's purposely as a conundrum in the hopes that we can find out what's behind it. Evidently, it can't land on the White House lawn there's some type of prime directive. It's like one of the parables that Christ said. He just didn't say what he meant. He spoke in a parable to force people to think and to look behind the words at the meanings. Project Blue Book hypotheses, they didn't work.
All right,
none of them panned out.
Here's a prime example. Sally in Tacoma says, would you please ask Ed if he's investigated crop circles in relation to what he's referred to as our progenitors?
The same device. It projects a sphere. The sphere is a tool. The tool does a job, and it disappears.
But the same motivation.
Same motivation to keep us looking up.
Well, that
otherwise,
sure does
we
a job.
Looking down, and we, you know, we look at the sheet metal with rubber things that go round and round. We become materialists. This keeps us looking up, you know, looking out at the stars. Well, some of us, anyway. It's the mystery and the wonder. Otherwise, we just become solid materialists. It's a little note from Dad saying, "Hey, we're out."
Huh. You might have a point there. That's pretty interesting, to keep us looking up, to keep us thinking about things otherwise that we would eventually just discard.
I mean, look how the system, look how it's shapeshifted since the 1940s. It starts out with saucers, and that gets old after a while. If it was just saucers, people would look up and say, oh, just those again. But then it shapeshifts into pyramidal things and the greens and reptilians and grays and all these kinds of things out there. I'm not saying that there aren't entities that look like that. But there's all kinds of vehicles and shapes and sizes and cylinders and a whole menagerie of stuff out there that's nonsensical.
And things that happen that are seemingly nonsensical, from crop circles to animal mutilations to people's claimed abductions to you name it. I mean, all of these things seem to happen. I mean, taken collectively, obviously something really is going on. Taken collectively, yeah. It's undeniable.
And it's forcing us to develop a higher intelligence, a higher level of intelligence to figure it out. What I'm suggesting to you is that this tool, this thing called remote viewing, is a primal first step in looking at the consciousness behind the phenomenon, pulling the curtain back on the wizard and finding it. We approach it first with its essence. What is this entity? What is this agency in terms of consciousness? Who are they that way? And then they meet us in the material world.
You certainly have taken remote viewing, Ed, to a place that no other remote viewers have dared go.
Yeah, we
and I mean, how did that happen to you? How did that transition occur? I mean, most of the remote viewers out there are viewing bridges and bombs and, you know, gas canisters, whatever, what you did before. They're still essentially doing that kind of thing. But the area that you moved into is so different. I mean, how did that happen?
The bait got me. I was attracted just like a moth to flame. The mystery out there, it captured me. This puzzle, it did the job. It attracted me. This UFO phenomenon, I wanted to figure it out. It's such a mystery, and it's so attractive. And we had the tool to, you know, the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency Science and Technology Program, for which I worked. I told him, I said, sir, would you like to use this to penetrate the UFO phenomenon? Now, we couldn't because we didn't have a charter to do that. You don't use U.S. taxpayer funds to go pursue your hobby necessarily.
Right. That's right. Yes, right.
But he couldn't do that, but he would have loved to have done it. And, you know, but we did it under the table. And it's just so fascinating, Art. I mean, what's more fascinating than that to you?
Nothing.
Really?
Nothing. That's it. All
yeah,
right.
And so it's the same with me. And now I had a tool to do it. You know what I'm going to do with it.
I want to know, Ed, if the things that I have investigated all these years and press so hard about have substance. And they do. I mean, they're obviously real. And as I said earlier, collectively, you'd have to be an idiot to deny that something is happening. And you're saying that really it's happening so that we might continue to consider what is greater than our everyday world and our material objects and all the rest of it.
Yes, perhaps even meet our maker. Come with me when we go out there and film. I'll give you a call one day. I'll pick you up. I have somebody pick you up. Come with me. You earned it.
Maybe, Ed. You never know. The world holds a lot of things ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this is a possible answer to all of this. What is under the surface of Mars, Ed?
It's a system, a control system. That's all I don't know how else to explain it, Art.
A living control system, or?
It's both. There's sentient machines and robots, and there appears to be a type of a life form there, but is the life form created like rods or not? I just don't know. I know it's the cutting edge of a higher intelligence. This whole thing may be programmed, and the whatever left it behind may be somewhere far away, or maybe this thing got out of control.
And there are many, many people I've interviewed, Richard Hoagland certainly, and others, who just are screaming bloody murder about what's on Mars, and they believe that NASA and that our government and other governments, it would have to be so, know a whole lot more about Mars than they're willing to say and that they're willing to have us know. Many people believe and hope that we're close to some sort of revelation about it, but they think that there's, I mean, they're discovering, Ed, in infrared photography, cities. I mean, if you look at it, it's hard to deny. It almost looks like cities on Mars.
My team knows that minimally there's at least one artificial structure there. That's I don't know about the cities because we haven't had time to look, but there's at least one artificial structure. There was a civilization there. But this control system is not that civilization that's gone. It is not.
It's not.
It is perhaps their progenitors, too. So I think the only way... I don't know if I'll ever figure this out, but let's meet them on their own terms, no expectations, and instead of what see what they can do, let's hear what they have to say. I use that term figuratively and allegorically, perhaps, but let's do it.
You're pretty
we've
sure.
We've got contact, and let's film it.
You're pretty sure about the clear aspect of the one message that we did get regarding our own future, if nothing changes, or I guess our own future.
All I know is that the people that we're going to, the entities we're going to contact on the ground in situ, are the source of that message. That's all that I know. Now, we know a lot about the physicality of it. It's astounding, absolutely astounding. If you would see how this, the physics behind what these, what this, this agency can do, it is absolutely amazing, beyond our ken. So let's just meet them and see what happens.
How will you approach them? And how do you imagine communication occurring? I mean, how do you imagine using what you have to actually communicate? How?
It's not what we have. We've determined where they want us to be. And we've been there before on a reconnaissance, and we have communication.
So you're now saying that a meeting could be set up?
A CE3, yeah. Close Encounter of the Third Kind, but this time no screenplay writer. The real one. And we film it. We film it so that the message, whatever happens there, whatever symbolic message or whatever, is on film, on camera, by a very respected filmmaker. Because politicians and government officials and military generals are not respected and they're not believed. But filmmakers are. They have a lot of respect. That's the way that our culture is. And so that's why we want a prominent filmmaker to do this.
Holy mackerel.
So it isn't Ed Dames or Art Bell or somebody else like that talking. It's somebody that many people respect and believe.
Do you have any idea when you might make this attempt?
Before summer, before time ends. Before the end of time.
That means soon. I mean, it means soon if you...
Probably June, Art.
June.
Yeah, May or June. Yeah.
Don't you worry, that could be too late.
Yes. Yeah, we're going out in February, but we won't have the camera crew there, so we'll see. We'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Boy, no small undertaking. Ed, Starman really did turn into something, didn't it?
Never make little plans.
Never make little plans.
Think about little plans. For people who really want to have fun with remote viewing, I have this Mindazzle kit that I need to pedal.
Oh, go on. Yeah, by all means.
Yeah, the workshops are boot camps. If you come to one of my workshops, Portland is January 25th to 26th, Albuquerque February 8th to 9th, and Seattle March 1st to the 2nd. If you enroll in one of those and we close the doors, you're going to learn remote viewing. It is a boot camp. And if you just want to have fun, though, then buy the Mindazzle kit. There's a two-hour video that comes with it, and I will autograph, as long as my hand holds out, all those Major Doom and Gloom posters. They're 17 inches by 22 inches, suitable for framing, and I will autograph them and include them free with the kits.
By the way, Ed, someone noticed that the number 666 is there, and they noticed the number 2012.
Somebody's got sharp eyes.
Somebody's got sharp eyes is right.
A set of target reference numbers for a target. For instance, Osama bin Laden, we assign two numbers to that. People in the workshops Osama bin Laden is dead, by the way. It's very easy for us to recognize that he's dead, and we teach that in the workshop, how to recognize if a person is dead or alive.
And how would that be?
There's when you put your pen on the paper and there's a response to the idea of Osama bin Laden present time.
Right.
There, you produce what we call an ideogram. And an ideogram for a person is a loop, an archetypical loop. And if the loop is broken,
yes,
the person is not alive. It's a life form that's broken.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it's just one of many things we teach in the workshop.
So then determination that a person is dead is a relatively easy thing, quick thing to do.
Yes, very, very easy. Very easy indeed. Yeah, sometimes it's sad. I mean, you know, when you're looking for a loved one.
Sure, many times, yeah.
Can I give you these order numbers?
Of course. So for Mindazzle, which I have, it's exceptionally well professionally produced. It's really cool, and it's a lot of fun. And or for the very serious workshops, are the numbers good? Are they different?
Yeah.
All right.
It's a 24-hour order line for the Mindazzle kit, and it comes with a 2-hour video, and it's a beautiful kit.
Right.
And it's 1-800-441-8547.
Okay.
And you can also go to the Art Bell Arts website and pop over to remoteviewing2003.com and find all this information.
All right.
And then for the workshops, if you want to enroll in one of these boot camps, there's only 3 left this year. I hope there'll be more, but I don't know.
Yeah.
That the enrollment number is 1-866-607-8439.
All right, so I've got for Mindazzle 1-800-441-8547.
Correct.
Right? And for enrollment in the boot camps, and I guess they are tough, the number is 1-866-607-8439.
Correct.
Now, when you come out of remote viewing boot camp, what can you do?
You've got your skills. You have some skills that go above and beyond the kit. You're able to, for instance, you're able to if your car was broken and you don't know what it is, you're able to discern what's broken on your car, where is broken. You're able to find something in your house that's missing, but not outside necessarily. If it's a known area, you can find a missing or a lost thing. Mm-hmm. You're able to discern the nature of events, for instance, at a distance, a coup d'etat or something like that, how many people were involved, those kinds of things. But for the search problem to find, let's say, the lost Dutchman mine or a missing child, you cannot do that in a workshop.
Okay.
You can get over to all the information by going to remoteviewing2003.com or to Art's website, and if you're on the net, on the web, then that'll take you to where you need to go.
All right. I know that a lot of people in the audience really desperately want to ask you questions about things that we've talked about in the past, and so we will get to the phone lines in this.
I'm going to miss you, Art.
Thank you. I'll miss you, too, although I think we've just arranged to probably see each other for one cause or another. So
probably two. Come to the islands, and then we'll go to this other place, too.
The islands, that's a lock, Ed.
Okay, good.
No problem. We'll come to the islands. However, I still have the same personal reluctance, believe it or not, to engage in remote viewing myself, and I've never really been able to put my finger on why, Ed.
I respect that. Many of my students have asked me, why do you think art is like that? We've all wore games that sat around at lunches and said, gee, you know, maybe it's this and maybe it's that.
You know, I don't know.
We've thought about it. Maybe it's, you know, maybe you just don't want to know things. And
yeah, I mean, the world is broken down that way. There are a lot of people who would rather be surprised about life. And but however, I understand the value of knowing as well. In fact, it could be invaluable, I suppose.
Well, sometimes, I don't want to know certain things. For instance, one of my loved ones was going to become hurt or die, or, you know, that I wouldn't want to know that. But on the other hand, if they had a debilitating disease or something like that, that would...
That you could do, well, see...
We just had a world, I'm not going to mention his name, but we just had the world's foremost orthopedic surgeon come to me and ask for help on a disease that could not be diagnosed, and we helped them out. I'm very happy about that.
Ed, hold on. Okay. We're at the top of the hour. From my desert, I'm Art Bell. Moving through the night like a freight train, this is Coast to Coast, to Coast to Coast AM. Stay right where you are. We will go to the phones.
darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again, because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, beneath the halo of a street lamp. I turned my collar to the cold and damp, when my eyes were stared by the flash of a neon light that split the night and touched the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. People talking without speaking, people hearing without listening, people writing songs that voices never share. No one did, just heard the sound of silence.
Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Many believe this song to be an enigma, but if you listen carefully to the words and apply them to just plain, for example, like remote viewing, all of a sudden they pop right up and make a lot of sense. The subject of Mars. Subject of Mars indeed. All right, once again, Major Ed Dames. Major Dames, before we plunge into the phones coming up momentarily, I wonder if there's anything that you really did want to get in tonight that we haven't yet inserted.
Nothing really, unless you want your clock stopped.
No, leave my clocks alone.
I'd like to say thanks to Keith Rowland. That's about it. I'd just like to say a word of thanks to Keith.
Thank
for,
you.
Being there for us.
Oh, I have a lot of thanks to give to Keith. He pioneered all this with me, the website, the radio show together. And we have this really cool CD that is going to summarize and capture as much of the website that's going away as humanly possible. And Keith is offering that. And I suggest people get to the website, not to be offered after the 31st. That's it. Really ends then, folks. Thank you. I wanted to promote that very quickly. All right, then, Ed, here it comes. On the international line, good morning, or whatever, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Hello, Art, it's Jeff in the UK. Yes, it is morning. I have a question for Ed. It was basically, I was wondering if he could shed light on the mystery, which is whatever is beneath the ice surface of Europa.
That's a good one, all right. Ed, beneath the surface of Europa, we know, I guess, it's liquid beneath the ice somewhere. What else, Ed? You've had something to say on that before.
Variety of creatures. Many of them are obviously very different than Earth, but and I don't know if there any of them are intelligent, but a whole variety of things. You think of a sponge and a chambered nautilus. And put them together in sort of a package. That would be one type of creature there. What we've done is remote viewers, and of course there's no validation until we get there. We take the idea of the largest living thing in the ocean of Europa,
mm-hmm.
on the planet of Europa.
Yes.
Now that could be a false premise, and we'll find that out when we use remote viewing. Because if our sketches and our descriptors show nothing at all, then there's nothing there. But indeed it does. And there can only be one.
What do they seem to describe?
When they go after the largest living thing, what do you get?
Again, it's sketches of, I should put some of these sketches on your website.
Yes.
It's sketches of, think of a spiral, a helix, but a spongy, springy type of a thing. And that's just one creature. That's the largest one. But we found many, many others.
How interesting. Indeed, where there's water, then there's all sorts of things that come with water, and where there's volcanic venting, there's heat. And so there's every reason to believe that Europa has what it takes to produce life. And of course,
there's a lot of heat too from induction, Art. If Europa has a core that's anything at all like iron, there's a tremendous magnetic field there because it's next to this big planet, gas giant. So that generates heat there too.
Indeed, so so that would say there's probably life there. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Art. This is Dave from San Jose. And real quick, I'd just like to thank you for what you've done in the past. Yeah, I'm the caller, and thank you for letting me on so many times. But thanks a lot for what you've done. And you mentioned last night with Sylvia that things aren't always what they appear. And so we'll be looking forward to you in the future in some incarnation. Thanks a lot. And thanks a lot to Ed Dames. And so my question goes to Ed. Ed, Mars will be approaching in August, I believe, the closest it's ever been in 50,000 years.
Well, he's right about that.
Does this have any bearing on the fact that we are moving into the Middle East and you see things in the year 2003 where maybe what we're doing in Iraq isn't just coincidence, maybe it's designed? And one other question, since Art's retiring.
Well, right? That's an awful lot to tackle.
Okay,
just, all right, pause for a moment.
I will pause.
Yeah, all right. Ed?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's destiny. I'm beginning to think that destiny is real. I mean, fate. There's a destiny and there's fate. You
mm-hmm.
may not be able to achieve your destiny. But,
mm-hmm.
Some fate may take you to the side, but I don't know. I just don't know.
Mars being this close, Ed, with what you've said about Mars and what you seem to know about Mars, then it's the happenstance of its being closer to Earth than in 50,000 years.
I'm a little bit embarrassed at my ignorance, but I did not know that until you did that commercial. And that, my eyebrows really went up. So I don't think anything's coincidental now. This especially is very interesting.
All right.
Very intriguing.
All right. All right.
Okay, I have one more.
One
more for the road. And the other thing is, Ed, do you see in your personal life or in others around you that maybe people are feeling something? Art always mentioned the quickening, and I know that it's very suggestible to people because people will say, well, I've had this foreboding or whatever. But what I really want to ask you is that have you seen in your circle of influence people who are experiencing or maybe even acting out in a certain way that would bring to mind to you that something, not only on a geopolitical level, not only Earth changes and things like that, but something deep inside people are changing. I don't even know if that's...
All right, well, that's close enough. Ed, that's close enough. That
I could put my finger on. The first time I noticed something really strange, the thing that caught me, again, was Sylvia Brown last night on her show
when
she said the end of time, because that really surprised me, because that's what I've been telling my students. I got this feeling like it's the end of time. And when she said that, it was, whoa, that's two of us. And that really surprised me. So other than that, though, no, I haven't noticed anything. I've been watching for people to have premonitory dreams and premonitions, and that isn't happening either. So.
Yeah. I'll tell you, though, Ed, The Quickening, the title of that book that I wrote, that was not a lightly considered title.
Sure it wasn't.
That was really carefully considered, Ed. I know that what we're going through now, we're dead into the middle of the quickening. We're right into the middle of it. Most people even know it. It's not like some great secret. The increase in the frequency of events and the odd events that are occurring politically, socially, economically, every single stage that I mentioned, they're all well underway.
A lot of opportunities for
character development I had.
Character development. Yeah, that's right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Hello, yes, it's me.
Yeah, it's you.
Okay, great. Art, great show, et cetera, et cetera. I'm heard you, I know you've heard that ad nauseum.
Well, thank you anyway.
Anyway, Mr. Dames, a great pleasure to talk to you. Listen, I'm sorry about your Dallas show and that it had to be canceled.
Which show was that?
I thought, well, not your show, I'm sorry, your clinic. Or your...
the workshops.
The workshop, yes.
We cut back on a number of them, yeah.
Right. What I wanted to suggest, Ingo Swann had talked on Art's show one time about how Sanskrit was an incredibly more inherently descriptive language than English, and that there were right. certain states of consciousness and you know, certain states of materiality and even pre-materiality that could be described utilizing the Sanskrit language. And what I was going to suggest to you is that when you go out to that CE3 site, that you perhaps take somebody who knows the language so that whatever is imparted to you can be described to the utmost ability. And then my question to you...
Very interesting.
My question to you would be, I've read this book, this regards the end of time as you were talking about it. I read this book called The Pillar of Celestial Fire. It was talking about, you know, how towards, you know, the end, so to speak, that there might be a raising of consciousness that mm-hmm. is put before us, and that there might be something akin to manna, you know, like the what in the Bible they call manna, or in the Sanskrit, bhasma. And I just wondered if there was anything like that on your shopping list that we might try to get a hold of so that when things start to happen, that something that we could get a hold of to allow us to be more open to whatever spiritual message. And I'll just get off the line and let you answer that.
All right. That's a big one. Ed?
I am a simple man, and honestly, I don't know what's coming. I don't understand what's coming. I just feel that we need to arrange to meet this control system. I just feel that it's very important. I don't have any expectations about that. Yes, there is. I'm driven by the adventure. I cannot tell a lie. The adventure itself drives me. But at the same time, I think there's a role that some of us have to play, and, you know, just because, and albeit adventure is part of that, but there's a role there to orchestrate that meeting. The people that I take with me and have taken with me in the past, some of the best scientists in the world, and the next time it'll be some of the best filmmakers in the world, those are the ones that I need to get there. But for me, it's the adventure.
Well,
I don't understand it. It's just downright fun. It is.
I know. I understand.
No, it's not worth doing.
Understand.
When you get to my age, and it's not worth doing unless it's fun.
Understand to the degree that would I love to participate in the real McCoy, the real first close encounter? Yeah, I'll be there, Ed. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hello. Yeah, my name is Walter from Mount Rainier, Washington.
Yo, Walter.
And hi, Art. And I was calling to ask Ed if he believes in a dimension of infallibility, not just perfection, but a dimension where you can do nothing wrong. Because, and the reason I ask is because it seems to me whoever created the story of God and Jesus was just trying to show us our own capability of being infallible. I mean, being divine, because like Jesus, all he had to do was believe that he was divine because of his Father's own infallibilities, capabilities, and he was automatically there. It's like the AAs believe that...
Let me interrupt you.
Okay.
Here's what I believe. That the more I see a lot, and the more I know, and I know a lot, the more I know that I know nothing, absolutely nothing. Every day goes by, the more ignorant I become. I don't know it. I don't understand a damn thing anymore. I'm telling you, I thought I used to, but I don't understand anything. So,
wow.
your premise, your hypothesis, your theory is just as good as any other, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, it's like, anyway, we see a lot of UFOs up here, and about your projection thing, the closest I came to one was one night a light. It was like the moon pulled up in front of me. It was just a round sphere, and it was like a 200 yards above my head, and it was just a yellow round, like a light. And the only way it could have been put there would have been either it was some kind of a light that it just pulled up above my head, stopped for about 10 seconds, and then shot off. But while it was there, it had to be either projected from above or it was a light. And have you heard of anything like that?
Of course.
For 20 years, we've been chasing things like that. That's why we, you know, and we take things on a case-by-case basis. We track them back. Many of them lead to Mars. Now, with one exception, and a big exception, and that is things of a transcendental nature. It appears that what we call angels, Elohim,
yes,
are not connected with this UFO phenomenon directly. They overwatch it, but they're not connected.
They are aware of it then.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then what we know as angels, Ed, how do you perceive them?
Well,
I mean, what are they? Are they really angels as we understand the meaning of angel?
They're pretty much the way the church fathers describe them. Yeah, church fathers were really plugged in. I mean, they really tried hard before there was a divergence, before natural science split off. Theology and natural science took off in two different directions. It's coming back together someday, maybe sooner than we think. But the church fathers really studied angels. They basically all said the same thing. Augustine, St. Thomas Aquinas, and St. Jerome. They basically agreed on what the nature and the function of angels were. And then it got spun off through time, and now angels are, you know, funny little things, and your guides, and this and that and the other thing. But they're real. They're very real. They exist in a mathematically different dimension than we do. And as opposed to ETs, which share the physical universe with us,
angels do not. Are angels acting at the bidding of God? I mean, you could broadly say, of course, we all are. But, I mean, perhaps more directly than human souls.
I can't answer that question. I just can't. I don't think a question like that has answers that have to do with words anyway. I think you have to go inside, and those are the kinds of things where, concepts drop away.
Only to remote view the concept or the idea of angels, that much would not come through.
No, because we can't comprehend the idea of, it's difficult to comprehend what God is or to put any handle or label on it.
You said the more you know, the more you know you don't know. I mean, you really went on about that a second ago. What brings this on? What changed? What happened to bring those words from
the
you?
Level of complexity that I've seen with this Martian phenomenon? It's just unbelievable physics, unbelievable complexity in terms of what they can do. I just unreal. It goes beyond most of the things I've seen in science fiction movies.
Huh. Well, life frequently does that.
I really do feel like one of the, in the movie 2001, one of those simians touching the monolith.
How sure are you that contact will be good? I mean, is there not the risk of a CE3, a real CE3 affair, being as negative as it might be positive? I mean, is there anything that makes you really certain you're going down a good path?
No, just a gut feeling. I mean, it could be the devil. It could be Satan's forces that were coming. Who knows? But it's a gut feeling. It's something that, I mean, we're all going to hell anyway, it appears. So what the heck? Six of one, half dozen of the other. No, I don't know. But we'll find out when we get there, won't we?
What do you mean we all going to hell, Kimosabe?
In a handbasket.
Oh, I see. The handbasket.
This system out there could have done, it knows what we're doing right now. It knows about Art Bell. It knows about what we're about to do. It's the one that set up the protocols and pinpointed the spot where we go back to. We already have recon there. Already had a degree of contact. So it's calling the shots. Let's go see, let's meet them on their own terms. I still say there are progenitors.
Well, I've never been totally comfortable that their terms are necessarily something we would immediately agree to. Stand by, Ed. We'll be right back.
It's been a too long time with no peace of mind, and I'm ready for the times to get better. Thank you. tell you I've been racking my brain, hoping to find a way out. I've had enough of this continual rain. Changes are coming, no doubt.
Covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories hoard and to use them to help us.
Take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222 or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed Major Ed Dames. Some call him Doc Doom. We'll continue with questions for Major Ed Dames in a moment if you'll simply keep seated. Once again, Major Ed Dames. I've worried for a very long time, Ed, or been concerned is a better way to put it, that I don't for one second doubt that there are extraterrestrials. Common sense says there are. That we're being watched, probably common sense too. The Earth is teeming with life. It wouldn't be hard to spot in various ways from great distances. So that we would be watched wouldn't surprise me. But, you know, I'm not so sure, Ed, that these are friendly beings. At least from our point of view. And they may well be, but I'm far from convinced of that. And you really aren't going on much more, you said, than a gut feeling, right?
Well, I didn't use the word friendly either, Art. I didn't say friendly. And I didn't say beings either. I said an agency or entities.
Yeah. Okay. But still, we're playing with words here. Whatever it
is. I said a control system.
Yeah, a control system.
And possibly our progenitors.
Yes. Yes. All right. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Yes, hello. I'd like to begin with just a comment. The only way I can deal with this idea of the end of time is to assume that that means that then we'll be in eternity. And then comes my real question, which is, if the true creator is removed even farther than we thought, do you think that the presence of angels among us indicates that we're really known to the creator and that the creator has some, you know, interest in us and is, you know, can we indeed count on the words of Jesus to whom you refer often?
Yeah, I understand your concern and your question, Ed.
The second question I can't comment on because it's beyond my bailiwick.
Well, I guess, but she's saying, are we so far removed from God that he's not paying attention? You're telling us, in a sense, that we are removed by God, in the sense that we were created by other...
I am saying that, yes. There were middlemen.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And in terms of the first point, the end of time is a metaphor. There's something up ahead, and we can't see around it. And so that's as good a metaphor as anything in my business or in Sylvia Brown's world.
You know, some of the things you're now saying, Ed, would be so important to the world that have you considered getting any of the other big voices in remote viewing, and you know who they are as well as I do, to sit down with you, something they've been probably unlikely to do in the past, perhaps original program type people, names that everybody would know, and begin to confirm some of this information with you, even if it's done non-publicly at first, just to confirm what you're saying?
For a number of reasons, no. And anyway, it's time to just to act on the information rather than just to talk about it some more. The time for talking is over. It's time to actually act. And we're going to do this. We're going to go out and set up the conditions under which a meeting occurs and see what happens. So we can talk the problem to death. We can study it to death. Nothing's going to happen. In the end, we have to do something. We don't understand the phenomenon. We're certainly not going to be able to. So let's act on it and see what happens.
Okay. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello?
Hi.
Hi.
This is Mike in Minneapolis.
Hello, Mike.
Hey, say, I wanted to ask Major Dames if he knows how Osama bin Laden died, and do you know who shot Abu Nidal?
Negative on each count. We could know how Osama bin Laden died, but we didn't check. We just know that he's dead. And it doesn't appear to be cursory information indicates it doesn't appear to be a gunshot or an explosion per se. It looks like he wasn't assassinated by his own men or something like that.
Hopefully, a giant clod of dirt hit him, like a cave collapsing.
No, it appears that his body is in a resting place, like somebody put him in a mausoleum.
Really?
Yeah.
There's an answer for you, caller.
It looks like he may have died of an injury and that he is in a tomb or a mausoleum. That's all of the sketches that we get are carved walls and things like that. It's not a collapsed bunker.
Fascinating. Dead, though.
Yeah, we can locate the body if we need to, but we have other things to do right now. Besides, it's better to go after terrorists. Al-Qaeda cells in the United States than go after a corpse in another country.
That's true. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Bell. Hello, Mr. Dames.
Hi. Where are you?
This is Tony, North Hollywood.
Okay, Tony. What's up?
Sylvia Brown mentioned last night in last night's program that she felt the next terrorist attack would involve transportation in the country.
That's right.
Our trucking system?
Trucking, trains, mass transport, she said.
Do you have any inclination like her that might happen?
Ed, good question.
It's an assassination that will also hurt other people. It's an assassination attempt. It looks like it will probably go off, but in so doing, it will take out a lot of other people. We don't know who the target is yet. We're having a hard time discerning it. Sylvia Brown did not say that She felt it was her fear that she expressed her opinion about the danger of taking out transportation links and conduits.
Right, right.
But she didn't say that that's where the next attack was with her. You have to listen carefully to what people say.
First-time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Hello.
Hello. Where are you, sir?
Hello.
Hello, where are you?
Oh, I'm in Canada.
Oh, okay. Well, you're on the air now.
Okay, great. Well, first of all, I'd like to thank both of you for raising people's awareness about the world around us and the universe around us.
Very welcome.
About whether or not we might have contact with other beings or whatever entities, whatever they may be. Myself, personally, I can only think that they would be friendly if they are so much further advanced than we are. Simply because if you look around in nature, any type of nature, the species that cooperate with one another are generally the ones that survive, that thrive and continue, and they rise up on the ladder.
Ed?
Or they're the top of the food chain.
Well, granted, yes. This is true, but
some of the Armenian orcas, for instance.
Pardon me?
Orcas, killer whales,
yes.
For fun. You know, they take bites out of other creatures just for fun. They'll
mm-hmm.
take a sea lion and play ball with it. So, I mean, top of the food chain. Amusement.
Well, we do that with the food we eat too, right?
That's my point.
And yeah,
we're not cooperating with the food that we eat.
Yeah, exactly.
We're stabbing it with our steely knife.
Wild Card Line. You're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning. Hello.
Hello.
Yes,
hi,
hello.
Art.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I would like Ed to answer a question you asked early in the evening when he talked about March 2003.
Yes.
He thought that would be the end times, and I wanted to know how he arrived at that. And
well, you know, he did not exactly say that. He said,
"Oh, I know."
What he said was, I believe, that he could not see past an event, some event.
You're right. That's right. And nobody knows the exact time, but I was wondering how you arrived at that, because I've done some calculations from listening to you and your programs and guests, and I know a lot of people go by the Gregorian calendar and everything, and it seems that it would be like 2007, but if you
I'm adjudging it upon my assessment of the North Korean situation. I feel that that situation will reach a threshold prior to the summer, that a nuclear device will be popped by the North Koreans on the Korean Peninsula sometime this year.
It's looking an awful lot like the war is going to be upon us in February, perhaps March, but somewhere in there. February is, I think, current thinking is what I'm hearing on all the commentary shows. And now, of course, we've seen the Brits already deploy a few days ago, and now the U.S. is deploying. I think we're doubling our troop strength.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like it's shaping up into a winter war. Maybe.
I'm saying the real danger is on the Korean Peninsula.
Oh, I hear you.
That's what I'm saying, because it's a virtual, compared to what we face in Korea, Iraq is a cakewalk.
Yeah,
what we have.
You're saying this is going to occur roughly at the same time, really.
I'm saying that the Koreans and the Chinese will act opportunistically as soon as we are completely engaged in Iraq.
Then another
the
curtain on stage two goes up.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hi, this is Clovis from St. Paul.
Yes, sir.
Art, first I want to say, man, I've been listening to you for like 5, 6, 7 years. It's been really entertaining. You opened my eyes. Ed, too. I've been listening to you on Art Bell just as long. But, Ed, I want to take you to task. I remember a while ago, maybe a year or so ago, you said you were going to find the wreckage of the Amelia Earhart airplane.
3 years ago.
3 years ago, yeah. Whatever happened with that, man?
A couple of things. One, the wreckage is off the coast of Courier Atoll. It's off the west coast. There's an engine and a part of a wing off the coast of Courier Atoll. I had a sponsor, a major airline company, that sponsored my team. They would pay our way over. The problem was, if we use aircraft, the local aircraft there from Tarawa, that local aircraft carrier only allows 15 kilograms of weight. And we need all that water alone to get to the site. So it has to be done by sea. And that's a $200,000 operation, and I didn't have the money.
Oh, so you couldn't afford to get the sea operation, huh?
Correct.
Have you sent any divers or anyone to just confirm, or any kind of thing like that to confirm it's there?
No, but there could satellite imagery can do it if we point it in the right direction.
Satellites have to know where to look.
Yeah, well, we can point them right there. I'm saying there's an engine and that part of a wing. The rest has fallen off into the...
But basically, you didn't go there, or you didn't do it because financing for that fell
correct.
Through, but you still maintain you know exactly where.
Absolutely.
And
that's right, yeah.
And that's
it's
where.
Within a thousand... The engine, one of the engines for her Electra, is right... It's still on the reef to the west side of Courier Atoll in the country of Kiribati, which is now, a few more years of global warming, will be completely underwater except for two islands.
So somebody better get to it.
Well, it'll still be there in relatively shallow water.
Yeah,
it just won't be off the coast of Korea.
Exactly. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hello, West of the Rockies?
Yes, that's you.
Hi, I've wanted to speak with Major Ed for quite some time.
Well, now you are.
First of all, I'd like to say, Major Ed, I've had precognizant dreams for over the past 20 years, and I'm a firm believer that there's a level of consciousness above ours. And secondly, I would also like to say the level of precognizant dreams after 911 or before 911 was quite high. Could you give some comments on that, please?
I'm going to correct you on level of consciousness. Consciousness is like a field, an electromagnetic field. Mind is like a field.
Mm-hmm.
There's no levels of consciousness, but there are levels of awareness. Okay? That's
right.
Important. Mind is in a consciousness field. It's immersed in that field. The brain is an oscillator. There's levels of awareness.
Uh-huh.
And as big events come up over the event horizon, more and more people will have precognitive dreams. The people who are born with innate abilities, psychic abilities, their feelers are longer, and they'll detect that event in the future first and start talking about it. The Sylvia Browns of the world, for instance. People like me who are very just average in terms of psychic performance, we have to use tools to go out and see what's ahead.
What happened with 9/11? I mean, I understand what remote viewing is. A lot of people say, why didn't you see it? Well, remote viewing doesn't see things that you don't go out to see. You pursue targets.
Uh-huh.
But what about the psychics? Where were the psychics? Those who are supposed to be the freelance receivers of impending large events.
Look at it another way. How does the consciousness perceive that particular event? Is it as big as, let's say, an entire continent of people starving to death and dying of AIDS?
Maybe not.
Yeah,
right.
That's what my point is here. Yeah, there's an entire continent out there right now, and the people there are dying like flies. How does that compare with a couple of buildings going down and a few thousand people dying and their children being,
Yeah, it's true. In this larger picture,
I'm not denigrating.
No, of course not. But you're right. A continent dying, and that is occurring,
mm-hmm.
would be a larger spike in the larger scheme of things. Yeah. No question about it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air without a lot of time, and Major Ed Dames, hello.
Yeah, good evening, Art. Good evening, Major Dames. Art, I just need to say that I was here with you the last time you were saying goodbye, and once again, the voice in the night will be gone. It's no disrespect intended to any of the people that have taken over for you, but it will not be the same.
That's very kind. Thank you. Do you have a question for Ed?
Yes, Major Dames, just a quick, observation here and a question for you. Without getting too religious or spiritual and offending anybody, it's already hard enough, I think, for a lot of people to believe in Jesus of Nazareth as the Son of God. And the Bible is very clear, both in Timothy and also in the book of Revelation, that in the end times, many will follow the doctrines of demons and great delusion will be poured out upon people. Have you considered the possibility that all of this is nothing more than a demonic deception of great magnitude?
Fair enough. All right, but hold it right there. We're so out of time. But that's a big question, Ed.
Well, I don't know what he refers to by the this. That's the this. If the whole scenario is what he's talking about or not, no. I've considered many things, and I don't know the answers. But I do know I'm responsible for my decision right now, my choices at this moment.
Yes.
And those choices are worthless unless I act upon them, period. That's all I know, Art.
So into the darkness or the light you go, one way or the other, huh? All right, listen, Ed, that's an appropriate place to end it because it's over. We're out of time tonight. All these years, I want to thank you for being with me, my friend.
Oh, the pleasure's been nothing but mine, Art.
You've been absolutely...
We'll see you in the islands. And let's both of us drop in on Coast to Coast once in a while and say hi. So
on the flip side, huh, buddy?
Our fans can decompress, yeah.
Take care.
Okay, Art.
Good night.
Good night.
That's Major Ed Dames. I'm Art Bell. On the flip side, good night.
Good night in the desert, shooting stars across the sky. This magical journey will take us on a ride, filled with the longing, searching for the truth. Will we make it to tomorrow? Will the sun shine on you? the desert, and there's wisdom in the air. I've been looking for the answers all my life. I failed you there. As the world we live in quickens, are we heeding all the signs? Have we lost our intuition? Are we running out of time? Midnight in the desert, and we're listening. Ooh, we're listening to you.